face against his good shoulder, listening to his heart pound against my ear, trying to catch my breath and stop the rising tears.
"How about..."
Dolly put a hand on Tommy's shoulder.
"How about I show you guys where the bathrooms are and where you can sleep? All the rooms are open. Just pick which one you'd like. We'll have to figure out sheets and blankets tomorrow. I'm sorry."
"What happened to the bedding?"
Cole asked in a low voice.
"They took it."
Dolly lifted a shoulder and shot a look from him to the kids, and then back to him, and finally Cole stopped asking questions. She led us down another bright white hall, the lights overhead bleaching out everyone's skin, making the dirt and grime that much more obvious. Pictures taped to the wall fluttered as so many bodies moved past them. The sharp smell of bleach. A large room, the size of a school's gym, wide open and littered with sleeping bags and bedding. Rest, I thought. I can finally stop.
"Hey, Jem,"
Cole said.
"Can you come with us for a bit? I want to debrief Kate so she has the full picture."
Liam's grip on me tightened, and I almost said no. I didn't think I could handle being around Kate until I recharged. But he and I were in this together, and I wanted to know where the other agents were.
"I'll be there in a second," I told Liam. "Pick us out a good room."
"All right,"
he began uncertainly, but followed the others downstairs with only one last look over his shoulder. Cole motioned for me to follow him into the room just to the left of the tunnel's opening, but I held my ground a second longer, trying to get a better look at the place. And I was unimpressed. Back in Los Angeles, HQ had had a kind of ramshackle look to it, like someone had dug a deep hole, poured in some concrete, and brought in mismatched tile, desks, and tables to decorate it. The lighting and plumbing had been exposed overhead, and we'd never had reliable hot water. But the ranch just looked like it had been forgotten. Despite the fact that the agents had been up here for at least a week, the floor was coated with clouds of gray dust and dirt. Door handles hung limp and broken. Paint was peeling off walls, and the wood on several doors was splitting. Light bulbs were either out or missing completely, leaving random patches of the hallway in darkness. The ceiling tiles were crumbling into powder. Whole chunks of the ceiling had fallen to the ground and had just been kicked aside. It was like they didn't care. A wave of anxiety went through me as I took it in. This was how you treated a place you had no intention of staying in. Owning.
"Is bullshit! This is such fucking bullshit!"
Vida's voice called me to the room the others had entered. I stepped in and shut the door firmly behind me, nearly knocking into a wall of filing cabinets. The room was just large enough for a single desk, three chairs, and a few framed maps of the United States. This must have been Albin's office, I thought, while he was still here. It wasn't nearly as crammed with random junk as his office had been at HQ, but certain touches, including the limp American flag hanging on the wall, were recognizably him.
"As soon as they were out of Los Angeles, Sen contacted the ranch and told them they were heading to Kansas,"
Cole explained to me from where he was leaning against the front of the desk with Kate. She kept her face turned down, her arms crossed tightly over her chest, thoughts clearly somewhere else. Vida paced what little free space there was to move, her hands on her hips.
"And they all left," I finished.
Damn it. Cole had been sure that the agents who'd left HQ with Kate to look for transportation for us were, if nothing else, loyal enough to Kate to want to stay and help us.
"And took pretty much everything that wasn't nailed down here with them, including most of the food," Cole said.
I was surprised at how calm he seemed.
"Kate and Dolly were going to come looking for us. Apparently you really sold that we were going to Kansas. We're going to have to start from scratch in building this place up, but it's doable."
Kate's head shot up. "What do you mean she sold that?"
"You knew," Vida said, a scathing edge to her voice. "You sent them away?"
I held up my hands, refusing to press my back against the door and get as far from those furious looks as I could manage. "I did."
I influenced them to go straight to Kansas so that we could break off on our own somewhere outside of the state. I should have made sure they didn't contact the agents here before we could arrive, though.
What the hell?
Vida seethed. I second that, Kate said, leveling Cole with a cold look. Explain exactly what you were hoping to accomplish.
Well, how about trying to save the lives of all of these kids?
Cole shot back. He braced his hands on his knees.
You want to know what your pal son was planning? They were going to split the kids up between the cars, take them just far enough outside of Los Angeles to think they were safe, and then turn them in for the reward money.
If it were possible, Kate went even paler. Vida, finally, stopped pacing. You can't know that, Kate began.
I saw it in her mind,
I said, letting the acid I felt in my stomach coat my words.
She had everything planned out to the minute.
They wanted the money to be able to buy weapons and explosives on the black market. They want to go hit Washington, D.C. They have no interest whatsoever in helping us free the camps.
Our plan played out like we thought it would, Cole said. Mostly. Don't get your panties in a twist, Connor. No one got hurt. It's a clean break. The fact that the other agents left does nothing but prove that our instincts on this were right. No one wants to help the kids. At least this way, we've got the ranch, and we've muddled them on what our plans are. If they're stopped or picked up by President Gray's friends, they'll give them wrong intel on us. This is the right base of operations for us, not them. It's quiet, we have working electricity and water, and now, plenty of space to work.
Yeah, and look at what we don't have. Kate finally detonated. Her pale face flushed, and she was barely keeping a lid on her trembling anger.
You sent away trained professionals. The ones who could have conducted these camp hits you want to do. The ones who could have protected all of these kids. We should have spent time working to bring them over to our side, not manipulating them into thinking it was their idea to go. And how dare you make this kind of decision without even consulting me? I can't...
She shook her head, her eyes latching so fiercely onto mine that I had to look away. Ruby? What is going on?
Give it a rest, Connor, Cole said with an edge to his tone. The plan is to train the kids to fight, to empower them.
To empower yourself, Kate corrected sharply,
and if Vida hadn't been in the room, I have no idea what Cole would have said or done in response to that. His fists clenched at his side.
I get it, Cole. I do. But this wasn't the right way. They took the computer servers. I have one laptop, and only because I brought it into my quarters to do some work last night and hid it when they started talking about leaving. They'll lock us out of the system. What are we going to do then? You burnt this bridge without giving us a way to get back over.
The League had spent the better part of a decade building up a network of information on everything. Whereabouts of former politicians, access into the Skip Tracer and PSF databases, building schematics, black site locations. I'd been counting on having access to it to proceed with any and all camp hits. If nothing else, we'd need the few known satellite photographs that had ever been snapped of some of the camps.
The Greens can break into the League's network. That's not even a question, Cole said. They're the ones that built it. And I took measures to ensure that we would be able to copy the research on the cure. My only question is, where is the flash drive of the information I stole from LitaCorp, with the study on what caused IAAN?
Kate's jaw set as she looked away. Her throat bobbed as she swallowed, silent just long enough for a cold, gripping dread to come over me.
It's in the garbage. We weren't far enough outside of the city when the EMP went off. It was wiped clean by the pulse. I'm sorry. I wish...
She shook her head, stopping herself.
At that, I sat down heavily in one of the chairs, feeling more and more like I was passing through a long tunnel in the opposite direction from everyone else. I barely heard Cole's sarcastic,
Oh, wonderful.
Didn't register that Kate had stood and was already moving around me to get to the door.
Where are you going? Cole asked. Let the kids sleep a little while longer.
I'm not going to the kids, she said coldly. I'm going after the other agents to fix this mess you've gotten us into, to get them to come back so we can work together on this. The chill in her tone sank through me, down to my bones. I'd never seen her like this, or at least I'd never had the full force of her anger barreling toward me. But I was angry too, furious. She had left us. She hadn't been there when I needed her, and I'd done the best I could to help everyone survive.
You want them to come back? I asked.
Who? The ones that ditched you at the drop of a hat to go play terrorists, or the ones that wanted to hand us over to the PSFs?
Kate couldn't even look at me.
I'm sure there's been a misunderstanding.
You're right, I said. I misunderstood how in denial you are about who these agents are.
Ruby! Vida snarled. Shut the f-
I don't know how many times they have to prove it to you, but these agents have never cared about the league you joined. The one that actually cared about the kids who are still stuck in camps, who are still dying every day from something we're within an arm's length of finding a cure for. We don't need them. We don't need to have them taint what we're trying to do here. Wake up!
I am not interested in sending kids out to play soldier, Kate said.
You didn't have a problem with that before, I said bitterly.
You were supervised by trained agents who led the tact teams.
Right. You mean the agents who then turned around and started picking us off one at a time?
How about Rob, the one who tried to kill both me and Vida in one accident? Do you even know that he came after us? He hunted us. He put a muzzle on me.
Vida was frozen in place, her face ashen. The instinct to protect Kate from any insult was clearly at war with the side of her that knew the truth. Cole reached out to put a hand on my shoulder, but I sidestepped him, waiting for Kate to look at me, waiting for an answer.
Dolly and I will leave first thing tomorrow, she said quietly. The other agents only left a few hours ago. We can still catch up to them. It felt like she'd slapped me across the face.
Fine. Then go.
Good luck,
Cole added, with only a trace of mockery in his voice. Her pale eyes flicked down over me one last time before she went out of the room, letting the door slam open and shut behind her. Vida was fast on her heels. I watched them go through the windows lining the computer room until they finally disappeared. I couldn't stand it anymore and started after them. Cole caught my arm and drew me back.
Let them cool off. They're just upset, but it had to play out this way.
Did it?
The question escaped before I could stop it, the doubt trickling in through the cracks in my heart. There was another loud groan of protest from the tunnel door. The sound got me on my feet, and both of us rushed out into the hallway. I was so sure that I'd see Kate charging down into the darkness, about to make good on her promise to leave, that the dirty, tired faces of the 8 kids standing there hit me like a blow to the chest. Each of them looked a little more terrified than the last. Senator Cruz brought up the rear, brushing away all of the hands that reached in to help her climb the last few steps. She glanced around, avoiding the assessing look from Dolly as she appeared to my left.
Made it in record time,
Cole said, pounding each of them on the back in turn, earning a few smiles and even more relieved hugs.
Did you have any problems?
No, we were a little confused about the instructions you gave us on how to get down into the base from the pub, but once we saw the place, we figured it out.
Zack, a tall, tan-skinned leader from one of the league's blue teams, seemed as unshakable as ever. He dragged a hand back through his dark hair and surveyed the place. If Zack looked relaxed now, confident, Nico had swung to the other side of the spectrum. He looked small and terrified, black hair standing up every which way, like he'd spent the last day running his hands back through it in dismay.
Nico crossed his arms over his chest, cupping his elbows, breathing in deep. At least until he saw Kate. She pushed toward him, shouldering her way through the other agents, but instead of flinging himself at her the way Vida had done, he reached up, covered his face with his hands, and began to weep. It was the only word to describe the sounds coming from him. They rose over the excited chatter, smothered each and every question, sapped the laughter until it died down to a whisper. My guts twisted until I finally had to look away and let gray static fill my ears instead. None of the other kids moved toward him, only Senator Cruz, who made it very clear with her expression what she thought of us for that. Her arms were around him even before Kate's. I turned to Dolly and asked where to find the showers and the sleep rooms, grateful for the excuse to get away from the horrible sound of Nico crying, from Kate's disappointment, the others' unknowing excitement for a place that had been stripped to the point of being almost uninhabitable. From what I could see, the ranch was split along two hallways that ran parallel to each other and were connected by double doors at either end. The lower level had the same floor plan as the upper one did. Two narrow, twin halls with over a dozen closed doors lining each of them. One hall the stairwell emptied into was little more than a series of bunk rooms to sleep in, the kitchen, and a laundry room. One of the doors had been left open, and I glanced inside at the four bunk beds. The voices in the next room were muffled, but I recognized Chubbs's, "What?" when it burst out of him. I crossed the last few feet to the door and gripped the door handle, wondering why they'd shut it at all. "She couldn't have just told us," Vida was ranting. "Unfucking believable. If our lives were in danger, she shouldn't have dicked around with Cole. We should have been the first people she told." I leaned toward the door, pressing my forehead against it as I listened.
"She and Cole have been acting all buddy-buddy for a while," Chubb said. "I'm not surprised they pulled something like this."
"It doesn't make sense."
Liam's voice dropped low enough that I couldn't hear it, but I was already backing away, blood pounding in my ears at the anger laced through their voices. I made my way down the hall to the linen closet that Dolly had mentioned. All of the towels had been claimed, but there was a soft, oversized black shirt tucked into a bag of street clothes the agents had missed when cleaning the joint out. I took that with me as I walked to the bathroom, grateful I wouldn't have to change back into all of my dirty clothes. The morning took on an unreal quality as I stepped into one of the shower stalls, stripped, and stepped in before the water could warm. The water burst out of the rusted shower head and hit my skin with a freezing slap, cooling me instantly, easing the prickling on my scalp. They'd installed pumps of soap and shampoo in each stall. Big, industrial-sized containers that were already half-empty. I let my shoulders hunch as my gaze dropped down to the water swirling deep, down, away, under my feet. I breathed. The patches of dirt that didn't wash away on my ribs and legs turned out to be bruises. I breathed. I breathed. I just breathed.
6. I don't know if I actually slept so much as dipped in and out of unconsciousness. Flat on my back, my hands folded over my stomach, I listened to the sound of the ranch waking up. Voices called up and down the hall to each other, asking about the laundry they'd put in, complaining about the lack of hot water in the showers, laughing. I closed my eyes at the sound of Vida calling for me. "Get up," I ordered myself. "You have to deal with this." I swung my legs over the side of the bunk, scrubbing my face, trying to smooth my hair back into a ponytail. By the time I switched on the lights and opened the door, Vida was already at the other end of the hall, doubling back when I stepped out.
"What's wrong?" I asked.
"Oh, finally done getting your beauty sleep, boo?" she sniped. "They waited for you. They waited an hour for you, and you didn't show. What? You're too fucking good to even say goodbye?"
Something cold coiled in my stomach. Kate and Dolly left already? After everything that had happened over the past few months, I was surprised by how deeply that cut.
didn't stop to say goodbye, didn't stay to hear us explain it fully. Kate would rather try to blow up everything we'd accomplished in getting the agents to leave by begging them back. She'd sabotage this for us.
It's almost 3 in the afternoon, Vida said. I stared at her in disbelief.
Some of the ice finally broke from her expression. She shook her head, muttering something under her breath that I pretended not to hear.
You were sleeping this whole time? You must have been more erect than I thought.
Listen, I started. About earlier. She held up a hand.
I get it. I just have one question. Did you keep Sen's plan from me because you thought I'd knife the bitch in the kidney?
That might have been part of it, I admitted.
Then you don't know me as well as you think, she said,
because I would have gone straight for the heart.
But fair. Where is everyone? I asked. Gran is lying around moping somewhere, Vida said. Boy Scout is annoying the shit out of everyone in the kitchen.
What? Why?
At her shrug, I asked. And Zoo?
All at once, her expression shuddered again. When she spoke, her voice could have cut the skin from my bones.
Do I look like I give a single shit where she is?
Vida, I said. Seriously.
Whatever it was, she didn't want to talk about it.
Vida was already backing away, heading toward the stairs.
We need to talk about this, I said, starting after her.
The look she shot back stopped me. That was the expression of someone who wanted to be left alone.
By the way, if you decide you fucking care, when Kate was walking down into the tunnel, Vida said, she said something to me. Tell Ruby playing with fire only gets you burned. That mean anything to you?
No, I said finally. I have no idea. Vida had been partly right. Liam was in the kitchen, only he was actually in the pantry, past the stoves and sinks, in the darkened back corner. He'd left the door wide open, likely to encourage some light inside other than the small flashlight he had clenched between his teeth. He was scribbling something down on a small flip notebook. I reached over to flick on the light switch, about to laugh at him for missing it, but nothing. I tried it twice, to be sure. Liam took the flashlight out of his mouth and smiled. And just like that, the past few hours seemed to melt away into a murky puddle that I stepped clear of.
Did you know this place needs 36 new light bulbs?
Why in the world did they have to take the light bulbs, too? Liam asked.
36 is very exact, I said with a faint laugh.
Is that your best guess? He seemed confused.
No, I counted. I did a walkthrough with Kylie and Zoo earlier. We also could use 5 new door locks, several gallons of laundry detergent, and about 2 dozen towels. And this?
Liam gestured to the sparse shelves in front of him.
This is pathetic. I have no idea how they even found this many cans of beets, but good Lord. What can you even do with them?
Well, there's fried beets, beet soup, pickled beets.
Ugh.
He covered his ears and actually shuddered.
I'd rather take my chances with the stewed tomatoes.
Is it really that bad? I asked, stepping into the pantry with him. I didn't really need to ask. It was. Actually, it was worse. Aside from a few loaves of bread and deli slices in the refrigerator, we had mostly canned vegetables and junk food like pretzels and chips. I leaned against him as Liam went on about trying to find pasta, cans of soup, and oatmeal, and closed my eyes. His chest was warm against my back, and I liked the way I could feel every animated word as it rumbled through him. He reached over and gave my hair a gentle tug.
I'm boring you, huh?
No, I'm sorry. I'm listening, I said. You were talking about Lucy?
Yeah. She was one of the girls who kept track of the food at East River. I think she'll be able to give some insight into how to rotate supplies and what we should be looking for.
Right. We would need to set up some kind of team to handle supply runs, though there were already so few of us I couldn't imagine Cole giving consent unless the situation was absolutely desperate.
and I couldn't imagine him giving consent at all if Liam were the one going out.
"You're tired,"
he said, running a thumb under my eye.
"Where did you disappear to? I tried waiting up for you, but passed out the second I lay down."
"I took a shower and was too tired to figure out which room you guys were in," I said, because how could I admit that I'd purposefully avoided the bunk room they chose? I didn't want to deal with the questions, not when my head felt as heavy as my heart. After having it out with Kate, there just hadn't been any kind of fight left in me. I found the first open bed and tried to sleep. He reached up and pulled one of those small, individual servings of canned fruit off the shelf and popped the lid off before I could refuse. He continued his careful count of the shelves as I tipped the can into my mouth and downed the fruit. I saw each and every possible conversation play out across his features, every question he wanted to ask, and felt a prickle of anxiety with each silent second that ticked by.
"I don't want to ask this, but you were going to tell us about the agents and what you did eventually, right? You wouldn't have just let us figure it out when only cars of kids showed up."
"I should have told you guys as soon as we were out of the city," I said. "It just slipped my mind with everything that happened."
"You could have told us before we left,"
he said gently. "It had to happen fast," I said. "And if anyone showed a hint that they knew what was going on, it could have clued the agents into what I was doing. We had to scramble."
"You and Cole?"
"He knows the other agents better than any of us. I needed his input on how to make the suggestion feel real.
And if I had told you, you'd have tried to force us to leave."
"Sometimes, most of the time, actually, it was hard to think of us as having had any kind of separate lives before they converged. Our lives were so closely knit together that it was a compulsion to tell him everything, to hear his thoughts on it all, to see if they matched mine. I'd held back from him before, about what I was, what I had done to my parents, but somehow, it wasn't that it felt worse exactly, more like there was just this nagging, this unflinching sense that something wasn't clicking the way it had before. I'd interrupted some natural pattern in our lives." I bit my lip, watching his brows draw together the same way Cole's had as he concentrated.
"That's why you panicked, isn't it? You just found out about it."
Liam rubbed the back of his hand against his forehead.
"Damn. So, what's the plan now?"
"We'll all meet for dinner to talk through a plan for freeing some of the camps."
"Maybe not dinner, if this is all we have,"
he started.
"But I'll figure something out. Everything will be all right."
Liam draped an arm around my shoulders and pulled me in. I pressed my face against his shoulder and let out a shuddering breath, my arms locked around his waist. This was right. Being close to him like this was right. For the first time all day, my mind wasn't racing. Here, in the dark, my pulse fluttering at his closeness, everything else seemed far away. He kissed my hair, my cheek, and I thought, can't lose this. Can't lose this, too. I couldn't tell him everything, not if I wanted him to benefit from what we were trying to do, not if I wanted to protect him. But we could have this, couldn't we? "Do you trust me to keep you safe?" I asked. I knew it must have seemed like I pulled the question out of nowhere, but all of a sudden it felt vitally important. I could see that he'd been hurt by my not telling him about the agents.
"Darling, if it were a choice between you and 100 of Gray's finest, I'd pick you every time."
I caught him by surprise, rolling up onto my toes and kissing him full on the mouth. My fingers were still gripping his shirt when I pulled back. My voice sounded low, rough to my ears. I had to fight for the words, and I was so self-conscious I wasn't sure I was ever going to pick the right ones. "I want to..." The dazed look faded from his face as he watched me, waiting. "I want to..." I felt my face flush, but I couldn't tell if it was out of embarrassment or because of the images flashing through my mind. I'd never felt so awkward and tense.
I'd kissed him before, really kissed him, but every time before had felt like it had been prompted by stress or urgency or anger, and each had been cut off by the demands of the world around us. This was really the first chance I'd had to think about him, all of him, slowly, to make a thorough study of him, the feel of his hands, the rasp of his stubble, the small breathless sounds he made at the back of his throat. We were in a pantry, and there were kids working outside in the kitchen. The rational part of me knew the limits of this moment, but next time, if we were somewhere else, and if we had another moment to ourselves alone, what then? I felt a small tremor work through me, powered by equal parts panic and longing. I wouldn't know what to do, how not to mess it up. Liam's hands covered mine as he leaned back against the shelves. Relief broke over me when I saw his smile. He understood. Of course he did. From the moment I'd met him, he'd known me better than I'd known myself. When he spoke, his voice was sweet, but his expression was anything but. There was mischief in his eyes, a hungry look. There was a jolt low in my gut as I realized it was because of me.
Now, darling, I just had myself a little thought.
Did you? I murmured, distracted by the way he reached up to run his thumb over my bottom lip.
I did, indeed, it being that you are 17 and I'm 18, and we have every damn right to make out like teenagers, like normal, happy, crazy kids.
He hooked two fingers over the waistband of my jeans and tugged me closer. I loved his voice when he lowered it like that. His accent broadened, warmed like summer air in the minutes before a thunderstorm. It was the full-on Stuart charm assault, and I was totally helpless against it.
You want to hear the rules?
My heart jackhammered as I nodded. That same hand slid around my hip, up under my shirt, and felt warm and perfect against my lower back. I closed my eyes as his lips just barely brushed mine. His touch made me feel brave. It pushed the uncertainty back until it couldn't reach me.
The first one is you can't think too hard about it. The second is you say when you want to stop. The third is you do whatever feels good to you. The fourth is
you stop talking, I said, blindly reaching back to pull the door shut. And kiss me? He was still chuckling as he complied, and then I was laughing too, because of the bubbling nerves, because his happiness was infectious, and because that dumb first rule didn't matter at all. Liam was the only thought inside my head. He was the hundreds of wild feelings exploding inside my chest. He deepened the kiss and coaxed my lips open to his. I mimicked the stroke of his tongue and was rewarded with a small growl of approval. Normal. Happy. Crazy. For him. It was a half hour later, after hearing him call for me repeatedly from down the hall, that Cole finally strolled into the kitchen and started banging around in the large, beat-up refrigerator. It gave me a second to disentangle myself from Liam and pull myself back together before going out to meet him.
"The animal needs to be fed," Cole said, filling a paper cup with water. "Or did you forget about him?"
And just like that, the weightless, wonderful happiness evaporated under my feet and I crashed back down into reality. I never forget about Clancy. My words were sharpened by irritation. Was I not supposed to trust you to take care of it?
No, you weren't,
Liam called from the pantry. Cole grinned.
He's going to have a bitch of a headache after the drugs we loaded him with. The kid was only starting to come around when I secured him in his little cage. Looked like he was mad enough to shit a brick.
All right, let's get it over with. Rather than taking us back upstairs, Cole led the way down the hallway of the lower level, passing several bunk rooms before reaching a door marked File Storage. He pulled out a small key ring and passed it to me. The lock gave me some resistance as I slid the key in. I took a quick glance around to make sure no one was watching and rattled the handle to make sure it would stay locked. We slipped inside. Cole reached up to tug on the string for the lone light bulb overhead. There were those simple, utilitarian metal shelves stuffed with random boxes and piles of paper, archived op files, supposedly, if you believed the lie that had been etched onto the door. It was convincing enough at first glance. My eyes roamed the library of folders and binders, all neatly lined up on the shelves, as Cole moved to the two shelves that were flush against the back wall.
"This one," he said, "with the red storage box. Give it a tug."
I reached over the top of the letter-sized box. The dust on the lid had been recently disturbed by hands reaching to get to the hidden latch on the shelf's back support bar. My fingers curled around it and yanked up. There was a loud, satisfying click as the entire bookshelf swung out toward me. The automatic lights in the hallway beyond it clicked on, flooding the small storage room with blinding, ultra-white light. It was a short walk down the bare hall to yet another locked door. Here, I had to insert the key and punch in an access code, 400-4004, before the door sprang open with a hiss.
"I'll be here," he said quietly. "Signal if you need me."
Another part of the deal? He wanted someone to watch my back from behind the door when I came to bring the little pest food. My choices were him, Kate, or Vida, but I'd added Chubbs to the list since he had always been resistant to Clancy's influence. I stepped inside the second hall, letting Cole shut and lock the door behind me. There were two holding cells in the hall, both of them about 10 feet wide and 4 feet deep. Each had been outfitted with a cot, a plastic toilet, and a bucket of water for washing and brushing teeth. As cells went, these were certainly an upgrade from the damp, musty spaces that had been carved out for the interrogation block at HQ. Better lit, too. Almost blinding with all the ultra-bright white walls and the exposed fluorescent light bulbs overhead. Hardly up to Clancy Gray's usual standard of living, though he seemed comfortable enough sprawled out on the cot, his arm thrown over his eyes. Cole must have hosed him down before bringing him inside, changed him into clean sweats. It was more than he deserved. He didn't stir as I moved toward the door. The metal flap built into it had another lock. I assumed my key would work on it, and was right. It squealed as it opened, but still, no response from our prisoner. I dropped the bag of food inside, set the glass of water on the small ledge on the other side, and took extra care in relocking it. Clancy waited until I had already turned to go to speak.
"Move in going badly?"
His voice was unsettlingly curious as he turned around to face me.
"Your thoughts are so loud I can hear them through the glass."
It was irrational, but for a moment I was worried he meant that literally. But I could feel him when he was trying to poke around inside of my head. There was always a tingling rush that raced down the back of my skull and neck. Clancy dragged his food over to his cot with his foot. He made a face as he pulled his sandwich apart.
"What? There's no steak anywhere west of Texas? What is this meat?"
I started to roll my eyes, only to realize he was actually serious.
"It's bologna."
He sniffed at it, his lip curled in disgust, then rewrapped it in the plastic it had come in.
"I think I'd rather starve. Be my guest." "In any case," Clancy said, ignoring this, "I'm disappointed by your lack of smugness. I would have thought you'd be in here first thing, gloating about being reunited with your little flash drive again. What's got your mood so sour?" "I'm looking at him."
He let out a light laugh.
"I overestimated how much you'd be able to figure out in these first few hours. Does the flash drive even work? Or was it erased by the EMP? How are those crispy research pages you rescued from the fire? You probably haven't even found out what they're doing to Thurmond yet, have you?"
An invisible hand seemed to wrap around my throat, forcing me to lean forward. Thurmond? What was happening at Thurmond that would have him looking so damn gleeful at my blank look? "Don't say it," I commanded myself, fighting against the panic that spiraled up inside me at that one word. Don't react. Clancy tore off a piece of the sandwich's bread and popped it into his mouth. When I didn't demand answers, the corner of his mouth lifted into a smirk.
If you want to know, you'll have to look and see for yourself.
He tapped his temple. A challenge or an invitation?
I know you're angry,
he began,
about the way it all went down in Los Angeles.
Thurmond, I kept thinking. That word was an infection, exactly as he'd hoped, if I had to guess. He's been trapped with us for weeks. There's no way he could have new information. Unless it wasn't new information at all, just a card he'd been holding on to, waiting for the exact right moment to play it. It took me a few seconds too long to answer.
Angry doesn't begin to cover it.
He nodded.
One day, though, one day, months, or even years from now, maybe you'll see that destroying that research was a selfless act, not a selfish one.
Selfless?
I whirled back toward the glass wall, cutting off my own retreat to the door.
Taking away the chance for kids to survive and never face the change? Robbing them of their only real chance to be reunited with their families and returned home is selfless?
Is that what you want? I thought liberating Thurmond in time would take precedence,
Clancy said, inspecting one of the grapes.
Are these organic?
I spun on my heel, crossing the distance between his cell and the door as quickly as I could without running.
Ruby, listen to me. The cure is another way to control us, take decisions out of our hands. What happened when you brought the research here? Have they even let you see it? Do you know where it is right now?
My fingers curled into fists at my side.
It's not some magic bandage that's going to heal all wounds. It's not going to erase the stigma of what we are in their minds. If there aren't side effects, they'll always be waiting, watching, praying that we don't relapse.
Tell me, he said, drawing his legs up, crossing them on his cot. I watched, silently, as his fingers drummed against his knees.
Does knowing there's a cure change the way the agents here treat you?
Silence stretched between us. He smiled.
What they're trying to do here isn't about you at all. They may have told you things to get you to come along, to surrender your trust to them, but they won't see their promises through. Not even Stuart.
The only person I have to worry about not trusting is you.
Whatever you're trying to accomplish by being here,
he said in a low voice,
bring all the kids you can to back you up. They're the ones that'll follow and trust you, not any of the adults. You'll be lucky if they ever see you as anything other than a useful weapon.
Because it's so easy to find kids in hiding scattered around the country?
I can help you track down the tribes roaming around. You can train them, teach them to defend themselves. We're heading toward the end game, and if you don't find them, they're going to be collateral damage in the war.
I gritted my teeth, but he was talking again before I could fire off any retort.
Forget the adults, Ruby. Make sure you're out in front of the kids. Make them love you, and you'll have their loyalty forever.
Make them love me?
I said, my anger coming back in a surge.
Not everything at East River was fake,
he said coolly. But everything that had been important, every memory I had of that place, was tainted by the creeping black touch of his mind. Just the thought of the way he had studied me across the campfire, the way he'd slid right through every one of my last mental defenses, the way those kids, the cubbies, had looked at him in total adoration. A shudder ripped down my spine. The room had grown too small and too cold for me to keep standing there and listen to every last trace of bullshit he wanted to spew. I turned back to the door, unlocking it, and made sure I switched the lights back off. And still, Clancy's voice floated to me through the darkness. He contaminated the air, made it sound like he was everywhere at once.
When you're ready to be in charge and actually do something, let me know. I'll be here, waiting.
And judging by the last look I'd had at his face, that was exactly where he wanted to be. 7. Cole didn't say a word to me until we were back out in the hall, with several doors between us and the president's son. Even then, he seemed distracted, pale brows furrowed, arms crossed over his chest.
"Could you hear what he was saying?" I asked.
He nodded.
"Through the small grate under the observation window."
"Before the attack, did you hear any intelligence chatter about Thurmond?" I asked. "Were there any rumors floating around HQ?"
"I was hoping you'd have some idea of what he was talking about," Cole said as we headed down the hallway. "I'll look into it."
I was headed to the large former rec room just to the left of the stairwell for dinner, but he was clearly escaping into Alban's old office. I caught his wrist as he brushed by me. "When are we going to firm up a plan for the camps?"
"Not tonight," he said. "We're still waiting on two more cars, and I want to try making a few calls to old supply contacts. Outfitting this place has to be priority number one. No one is going to believe we can do anything if we can't even get the kids clean clothes and a few warm meals. I asked some of the Greens to start thinking about how they would stage a camp assault. In the meantime, take a breather. We'll be working soon enough."
I returned his wave as he crossed through the doors connecting the hallways and followed the smell of spaghetti sauce into the rec room. Someone had assembled folding tables and chairs in neat lines, brought in a small radio, and propped it on the scuffed-up pool table the agents had oh so graciously left behind. Next to that were two large pots with serving utensils and a dismally small stack of paper plates. It had taken me a few hours to notice that the ranch was reassembling itself into something that seemed kind of clean. The silent downstairs halls were punctuated by the banging of washers and dryers, which seemed to be going at all hours of the day. I finally saw that the floor tiles were more white than yellow, and when I went to splash some water on my face in the bathroom, there were no drizzles of rust-stained water streaking across my skin. I smelled bleach, detergent. It was almost homey. I passed by two sheets of paper tacked onto the door, stopping to examine them. I recognized the handwriting immediately as Liam's, but it took me a moment to understand what the charts were, why there were stubs of pencils attached to each one with string. They were sign-up sheets, divided up by chore: laundry, cleaning, organizing, food preparation. Under each of these headers were the names of kids. Everyone had to help, but they could choose their chore. That was Liam's style. I spotted Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Zoo sitting at their own table, heads bent close together. Vida saw me first and instantly shut up, pulling back and casually picking up her fork again. I finished spooning some pasta onto my plate and moved toward them. "What's going on?" I asked, taking the open seat and turning to poke Liam's side. "I saw the chore charts. You should have told me earlier so I could have signed up for something." Liam glanced up from his notebook. When he moved his hand, I saw a string of numbers, equations he seemed to be untangling.
"It's all right. You're busy with other things."
Other things that were, unfortunately, not spending time with him alone in the pantry. "What's this?" I asked, leaning over to get a better look at what he was doing. He shot me a rueful smile.
"Trying to figure out when exactly we're going to run out of food. I've been looking at the nearby towns, and I think I have a few we could hit for supplies where there's minimum contact with the population."
"Cole said he's handling it," I said. He snorted. Something about that rankled me. "It's too dangerous to leave the ranch right now. He'll take care of it." Zoo turned to study me, her expression troubled. I pointed to her plate of pasta, but she still didn't touch it.
"We could go out," Liam pressed. "You, me, Vi. Hell, I bet Kylie would come. It'll be like old times."
Zoo reached across the table, gripping his forearm, holding it down against the table. She kept shaking her head, eyes wide. He wasn't allowed to go. She wasn't going to let him leave. And secretly, I was glad she was the one telling him so, because I was right there with her. I wanted him here, where he was tucked safely out of harm's way.
"I've done it 100 times,
he told her softly.
"What's got you like this?"
She released his arm, shrinking back in a way that was very unlike her. I started to ask her what was wrong, only to be interrupted by a frustrated groan.
"Ugh, never mind. I'm not even hungry," Chubbs exploded, shoving his plate away from him.
There was more sauce down the front of his shirt than there was left on his plate. It turns out it's fairly difficult to get a fork full of slippery noodles up to your mouth when you are missing the eye part of hand-eye coordination. When Vida didn't go in for the kill on that one, I shot a sideways glance in her direction. The whole room vibrated with happy chatter, laughter, which made Vida's silence that much more unnerving.
"You shouldn't have thrown the old lenses away. They weren't cracked that badly."
"What was I supposed to do?" Chubb snapped. "Tape them to my face? Walk around holding one up to my eye like a magnifying glass?"
"Wouldn't that have been better than sulking around and blindly bumping into things?" I asked. He'd gone off earlier and pitched them into a trash can in hopeless frustration. I'd fished them out and brought them back to the sleeping room for when he calmed down and started thinking rationally again. "We can ask Cole about getting glasses added to our supplies list," I said.
"The lenses are prescription," Chubb said sharply. "I don't have the information, even if he could get them made. Reading glasses aren't strong enough, and they give me a headache when I wear them too long."
Vida slid something across the table, never once looking up from her plate of pasta. Chubbs must have thought it was some kind of utensil, otherwise I have no idea why he didn't immediately snatch the glasses up. The frames were about the same size and shape that his old ones had been. The lenses stuck out, not by any means a perfect fit, but close enough. I opened them and slid them onto his face, and Chubbs practically reared back in surprise, patting them in disbelief.
"Wait, what? These are..."
"Don't lose your shit," Vida said, casually raking her fork through her spaghetti. "Dolly had an extra pair of reading glasses and helped me switch out the lenses for yours. They look just as stupid as the other ones did, but you can at least see, yeah?" Chubbs and I both stared at her, stunned.
"Vi,"
I began.
"What?"
Her pitch rose slightly on the word, coming out as a bark. More insecure than angry.
"I got tired of being his seeing eye dog. It made me feel like an asshole for laughing every time he tripped or walked into something. And I don't like feeling like an asshole all the time, okay?"
"It's so hard to go against our nature,"
Chubb started.
"He means thank you," I said, cutting him off.
"That was really thoughtful, Vi."
"Yeah, well..."
God, she was embarrassed. I took another bite to hide my smile.
"I didn't save the starving children of Africa or anything. He breaks this pair, he's SOL.
"Wait, what?"
Liam's startled voice broke clean through our conversation. He slid the paper Zoo had been scribbling messages on closer to him.
"Are you sure? I mean, positive? Why didn't you tell me before?"
Zoo reached across the table and took the paper back out of his hands. He was too impatient to let her finish writing the words out and awkwardly leaned across the table, his eyes scanning the words as fast as she could put them down.
"I thought you would leave to find them. I'm sorry."
"Oh, man,"
he said, dropping a hand on her head.
"I wouldn't have. I won't."
"You don't have to be sorry. I get it. But are you sure? It just seems like such a coincidence."
He stilled suddenly, looking a little sick to his stomach at whatever she wrote down next.
"That sounds like her. But how did it even happen? What were you doing in Arizona?"
Chubbs waved a hand in front of his friend's face.
"Care to share?"
"Zoo!"
Liam pressed a fist to the base of his throat and rubbed it for a moment.
"Apparently, on the way over to California, Zoo crossed paths with my mom,
I've been trying to figure out where they've been in hiding.
Zoo was still pale, watching Liam closely, like she didn't quite believe him. I sat back, the flicker of concern turning into an all-out flame. Before, we'd always made it a priority to keep the four of us together as a unit. It was rare for us to split off, and even then, no one was really ever left alone. I could understand the rush of feeling that came with being back together, wanting to make up for lost time. But this desperation I saw in her, the way she always seemed to be tracking us, making sure we were still there, made my heart feel like it was tearing itself into pieces. What had happened to her? Zoo wasn't normally scared or even all that anxious as a person. At least, she hadn't been. Someone had done this to her, exposed every last nerve, left her wide open and raw.
"Because they caught heat from Gray's lapdogs after you broke your stupid ass out of that camp?" Vita asked with her usual sensitivity.
"Why Arizona?" I asked. "Or, I guess a random choice is as good a choice as any?"
Zoo was furiously scribbling something down, looking up only to shoot an exasperated look at us when we crowded over her. Liam put his hands up.
"At your leisure, ma'am."
When she did finish, it wasn't at all what I was expecting, and judging by how Liam's face lost the remainder of its color, it wasn't what he was expecting either.
"They're hiding kids in their house, protecting them. She used the name you gave me, Della Goodkind, but I knew it was her because she looks and talks like you. I told her you were safe."
"Oh, God,"
Chubb said when I spun the paper his way.
"Why am I not surprised? Your whole family fell from the crazy tree and hit every damn branch on the way down."
Zoo knocked her pencil against the end of his nose in reproach before continuing in her big, looping handwriting.
"It was just for a few minutes, but she was really nice."
Liam was like a starving kid stumbling across someone's picnic basket.
"Did she say anything else? Was Harry there with her? You said she's been helping kids, but did she ask you if you wanted to stay, or any of the other girls? Is that what happened to Talon?"
"Which of those questions did you want answered first?" Chubbs asked, "because I think you just crammed 10 into 2 seconds.
Zoo shrank back against her chair. The pencil rolled off the table and into her lap as her eyes drifted down to where her fingers were busy rolling up the hem of her shirt.
"Kylie said Talon didn't make it to California," I said carefully. "Did someone hurt him?
Did the kid croak?"
There was a steel-cut edge to Vida's voice.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Am I supposed to act like the rest of them and treat you like you're a baby? You need me to coat everything in cotton candy, or can you be a big girl?"
Liam flushed with anger.
"Enough. You have no idea what you're even talking about," Chubbs growled.
"That's not fair," I began.
The only one who didn't seem bothered by it, who didn't seem to be showing much of any emotion, was Zoo. She stared at Vida for a moment, meeting her hard gaze with one of her own. Then she returned to her sheet and began to write quickly again. Both Liam and Chubbs were silently fuming in Vida's direction. Zoo held up the paper again, this time angling it so even Vida could read the words there.
"We got run down by skip tracers, and he died when we crashed. A friend helped me get to California when I got separated from the others."
I let out a soft sigh and closed my eyes, desperately trying not to picture it.
God, Talon, no one deserved that.
"Friend?" Chubbs pressed. "Another kid?"
She shook her head, but didn't elaborate.
"An adult?
An adult drove you?"
Liam ran both hands over his face.
"Oh my God, I'm scaring the crap out of myself picturing this. We never should have split up. Never. Never. Oh my God, weren't you scared he was going to turn you in?"
Zoo was so still, so pale, I wasn't sure she was breathing. She looked up toward the ceiling, blinking rapidly, like she was trying to fight off rising tears.
"She's a good judge of character," I said, putting an arm around her shoulders.
"Still so small. little bird bones, made that much sharper by hunger and stress.
And you came to that conclusion how, exactly?
Chubbs asked, pushing his glasses up.
Based on the fact that she let you into the van instead of locking you out?
Exactly, Liam said.
I seem to recall someone trying to vote her out.
Yeah, I said. Thanks a lot, trying to dump me off on some random road.
Excuse me for trying to look out for the group, Chubbs huffed.
Zoo started to write something down, but Vida ripped the paper out of her hands, held it in front of her face, and tore it straight down the middle.
If you want to say something, fucking say it.
Her chair screeched as she shoved herself back from the table and swiped her plate from it. I saw the strain of keeping it together and how stiffly she held her neck up and her shoulders back. For one strange second, all I could think about were those old cartoons they used to show on the weekend, the way they'd show a spark burning its way up the fuse of a pile of dynamite. I should have known better than to follow her. Bye, I called, and had to jog to catch up to her. She was stalking down the hall, all lean muscles and furious power, down the stairs to the lower level. Where was she even going?
Vida!
I grabbed her arm, but she threw me off, hard enough that I hit the nearby wall. A burst of pain rocketed through my shoulder, but I didn't back down. Her top lip had been curled into a snarl, but the second she registered what she'd done, it lost most of its ugliness.
You're gonna wanna walk away, she told me.
And for the first time, I realized she probably didn't know where she was headed either. She was just trying to get away from that room. From us.
Not like this, I said. What's going on? Talk to me.
Vida turned and started down the hall again, only to spin back on her heels. I had misdiagnosed the situation. Badly.
Jesus Christ, you can't let anything sit, can you? She snapped. You can't ever just let anyone be to work their shit out. Hilarious, seeing how you can't even handle your own crap.
I'll try to work on caring less, I said. Zach was coming down the hall toward us, his eyes looking everywhere but at the corner we'd drawn ourselves into. I turned my back on him at the same moment Vida did. She waited until his footsteps faded before releasing a harsh breath.
You know, I really thought you and me...
Her voice choked off. When she laughed, there was a strained quality to it.
Never mind. What do you even care?
You just told me I care too much, and now I don't care enough, I said. Which is it?
Both? Neither? Jesus, what does it matter?
She snapped, running her hands back through her short hair. The ends were still bleached, with only the barest hint of blue still clinging to the strands.
I'm happy for you. Oh, so fucking happy for you that you get to have this beautiful reunion with your real friends. You get to stay with these people and shoot the breeze about how great it was when it was just the four of you. You get to have all of your stupid inside jokes. But what I can't stand, what makes me sick, is how you...
Is how I what? It was a struggle to keep my voice down.
What else? Lay it on me. Come on. Clearly something else is pissing you off if you're picking fights with a girl who's clearly been through hell and back. I can't fix it if you won't tell me what's going on.
The spark finally hit the pile of dynamite, but the explosion wasn't what I was expecting. Vida's expression shattered, and she ripped air into her lungs with short, jagged breaths.
You just replaced him. In your head, you just traded Jude for that little girl like he was nothing. Like we were nothing to you. I get it, okay? But don't. Don't pretend to act like you give a shit when you clearly don't.
She was crying. Really crying. And I was so stunned by it that I just stood there. She spun away from me, anger and humiliation coming off her in waves, backing herself farther into the corner. You just replaced him. Like we were nothing to you. Was that really what she thought? A deep, echoing pain ripped through me. That I'd never cared about them? That I wasn't committed? I was cold to them in the beginning. I know I was. But it had only been to protect myself. Letting people in, dropping the walls from around your heart? I couldn't risk being vulnerable like that in the League, not when I needed to survive. It had seemed crucial to learn to bury every feeling, good or bad, at Thurmond, to fold every wild emotion back before it got away from me and someone wearing black noticed. There, if you were still, if you were mostly invisible, if you couldn't be provoked and punished, you were left alone. I'd fallen right back into that strategy at the League, functioning from moment to moment, op to op, lesson to lesson, numbing every stray feeling to avoid exploding with how unfair it all was, how terrifying, and how crushing. So no one, even for a second, would question my loyalty to their cause. For a long time, it had been the only way I had of protecting myself from the world and everyone in it. But Jude? Jude had burrowed right in, either oblivious to what I was doing or trying in spite of it. Did she blame me for all of this? If she had been leader, would any of this have ever happened? Would we all... I closed my eyes, trying to black out the images that stormed in my mind. Jude on the ground. Jude suffocating on his own blood. Jude's broken back, twisted legs. The look in his eyes, like he was begging me to help him, to kill him and end the suffering. That damn nightmare. Chubbs told me again and again that it would have been instantaneous, that his... Why was it so hard to say the word death? He'd died, not passed away. Jude hadn't passed anywhere. He hadn't slipped away. He'd died. His life was over. There would never be another word from him. He'd come to an end the way all stories eventually did. He wasn't in a better place. He wasn't with me. Jude was buried with all of his hopes under cement and dirt and ash.
God!
Vida raged, her voice raw. Even now, you can't even fucking deny it, can you? Just leave me alone. Go away before I... You think I don't know that it was my fault? That if I had kept him close, if I hadn't let him come at all, I told her quietly. I imagine how it was for him, how in the end he must have suffocated under all that weight. I wonder how much pain he must have been in, and if Chubbs is lying to my face every time he swears it would have been too quick for him to feel anything. My mind keeps circling back to it over and over. He must have been so scared. It was so dark down there, wasn't it? And he just fell behind. Do you think he realized it? That he was waiting for us to come back and... I knew I was babbling, but I couldn't stop myself. He shouldn't have been out at all. He was only 15. He was only 15. Vida backed against the wall, sliding down it, openly sobbing, both hands pressed to her face.
It was my fault. Why don't you fucking see that?
I was in the back. You weren't even close to him.
I should have heard him. I should have made him walk in front of me, but I was so damn scared I wasn't thinking at all.
No. Vi, no. I crouched down in front of her. It was so loud down there. This wasn't her fault at all. I felt a fierce surge of protectiveness go through me at the thought of anyone else walking by and seeing her so vulnerable. Later, when she pulled herself back together, it would make her mortification about this that much worse. I rearranged myself as I sat down, trying to block the view of her from anyone coming down the hall. When I reached out to her, she didn't stop me.
You and Kate? You won't even say his name, she said. I want to talk about him, but you keep trying to box him up and put him away.
I know you think I don't care. My chest felt unbearably tight. It's just, if I don't hold these things in, I feel like I'll dissolve. But you, all of you, the only thing I've ever wanted was to keep us all together and safe,
and I can't ever manage to do that.
Them, you mean?
Vida hugged her knees to her chest.
I get it. They're your people.
And you're not? I asked. There's no ranking of who I care about most. I couldn't do it even if I tried.
Well, if the building was on fire, who would you save first?
Vida! She rolled her eyes, wiping her face.
Oh, calm down, boo.
I was just kidding.
Obviously, it wouldn't be me. I can take care of my own damn business.
I know, I said. I don't know who I'd try to save first, but if I had to pick someone to back me up on the rescue, there wouldn't be any question. She shrugged, and after a while said quietly, The thought of going back into that room makes me...
I know this is going to make me sound like I'm on crack, but I keep walking into rooms, and I keep looking for him like he's going to be there. It's like a punch to the goddamn throat when I catch myself.
I do that too, I said. I keep waiting for him to come around each corner.
It's a stupid, fucking awful place I'm in, she said. To be jealous of that little girl and you and all of them? That you get to all be together when it's never going to be that way again for us? You can't even look at Nico.
God, Ruby, what's it going to take for you to stop punishing him? When do you start listening to his apologies?
When I have a chance of believing them.
She gave me a hard look. Jude was his only friend. Nothing you could do to him is worse than what he's doing to himself.
Kate's not going to be able to pull him back from this again. This is worse than when they first brought him into HQ, after he got out of that research program where they did all of that shitty experimenting on him.
I took a deep breath. I'm sorry I left you to tell Kate alone.
Nope, she said, holding up a finger. Be sorry that you've been too chicken shit to really talk to her about it.
I don't understand. I don't get why everyone I care about is in fucking pieces and none of you will even try to help each other because it hurts too much to face it head on.
Jude would never have let this happen. He wouldn't have. He was the best of us.
It was amazing, you know, how Jude had pinned us all down, how deeply he had read into who we were and what we wanted. There were people in the world whose purpose seemed to be to serve as points of connection. They opened us up to each other and to ourselves. What was it that he had told me? That he didn't want to just know someone's face, but their shadow, too. He was. There would never be another person like him. There was the loss I felt, and the loss that the rest of the world would never realize. Both sat like stones on top of my chest.
I'm not good at huggy shit, Vida warned. But if you want to talk like this again, I'm there. Okay?
Okay. And I don't know why that moment about did me in, when every moment before had been just as gutting. I leaned my shoulder and head against the wall. Maybe because I knew how proud of us he would have been for coming this far and saying this much.
Talk to Nico, please, Vida said. Don't make me beg. Don't treat him like he's not even goddamn human.
I think I hate him, I whispered. He made a mistake. We all did.
I leaned back on my hands, fingers curling against the cold tile. Did they mess with her? Vida asked suddenly, holding out an arm to stop me. While she didn't whisper the question, the fact she wasn't asking directly in front of Zoo seemed to indicate some newfound sensitivity. Scramble some eggs up here or something? Or not?
No, I said quietly, watching as Liam settled in next to her, running a hand over her hair. She doesn't want to talk, so we don't make her. It's her decision.
Vida nodded, absorbing this. Must have seen some shit then. Some real bad shit.
Stop pushing her on it, okay? She's had every other choice taken away from her. She at least gets to choose what she wants to say and when she says it. I turned at the sound of soft footsteps padding up behind us. Zoo hung back,
her hands tucked into her pockets, until Vida waved her toward us. She waited until Zhu was looking at her before saying,
"My bad, Z. I shouldn't have gone bitch on you. We cool?"
Some of the strain on the girl's face faded. She stuck her hand out to shake, but Vida gave her a little fist bump instead.
"All right," I said, forcing my stiff body up off the floor.
"Should we go back? The boys are probably wondering where we are."
"Let 'em wonder," Vida said. "We've got some catching up to do."
8. The hallway was washed out in a familiar shade of red, one that seemed to glow in an unsettling way. It grew brighter, pulsing as I took another step forward, glancing at the framed photos that lined each side of the otherwise bare walls around me. There were faces there I recognized. I remembered. That young agent who'd been killed escaping custody after an op gone wrong. The woman who'd been picked up just as she was going to meet a contact, shoved into a dark van, and never heard from again. I ran my hand under the photos, counting them off in twos, then threes. Dead. This is where the League marked the lives it had sacrificed, and remembered the bodies that would never get graves. So many. So many men and women who'd died before I ever joined up. Almost 8 years of death. My fingers stilled under the unsmiling face of Blake Johnson. He looked small, young. It might have been because he was surrounded by older faces, or maybe the shot had been taken when the League first brought him in. That had to be it. He had looked so much more grown up when he'd gone out on the op that had killed him, hadn't he? Why was there such a difference between the face of a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old? Something warm and wet hit my toes. A thin line of black liquid, like ink, was gathering there, soaking my skin, staining it. That tiny rivulet was the product of 4 separate, winding streams sliding down the tiled hall. My hand knocked against the next picture as I braced myself, and there was a sharp, white-hot pain in my palm that finally forced me to look up. The last dozen pictures were cracked, their frames hammered together with what looked like twisted pieces of metal and shards of glass. The red light burned brighter, dimmed, and burned again, over and over. I raised a hand to shield my eyes, but it was only an exit sign. At the next swell of light, I saw the black ink had a source, a growing pool. I saw it wasn't black ink at all. The figure was face down, both arms and legs twisted at a strange angle. It was a boy, all thin limbs, big hands, big feet, as if he hadn't quite grown into them yet. Puppy paws, Kate had called them once. The light faded over him again as I rushed forward and brightened just enough for me to see it was Jude. The blood was everywhere, streaking his face, his hands, his broken back. I was screaming, screaming, screaming because his eyes were open. His mouth was turned down into the pool of it, but his lips were moving. He shook, his body giving those last, involuntary jerks. 2 hands clamped down on my upper arms, ripping me out of that hallway and into another. No! Oh, God, he needed help! I needed to help him! My mind came awake with a surge, so quickly I thought I was actually going to be sick. I spun, my legs disappearing under me, but someone held me up. My teeth knocked together as I was shaken back into reality.
Easy, easy.
Southern. Liam? No, Cole. His anxious face came into focus. The lights overhead were pure, unwavering white, with more light from small windows at either end of the hall. I focused on the pane of glass behind his head, where I could see a variety of weights, treadmills, and mats. Jim. Cole's face was beaded with sweat. His skin was flushed because he'd been in the gym. But I hadn't walked here. I hadn't come to find him. I hadn't left. Cole drew me forward into the training room. The air conditioning was running at full throttle, instantly cooling the patches of sweat on my back and under my arms. He lowered me down onto one of the benches and disappeared for a second, returning with a small towel and a paper cup of water. I hadn't realized I was shaking until I tried to drink. Cole took my left hand and pressed the towel against my palm. I looked down, surprised to find streaks of fresh blood running down my wrist into the crook of my elbow. It was all over my jeans and shirt. I jumped up, or at least tried to. My mind narrowed in on the image of Jude, the way the red light had turned his blood black. But this wasn't his blood, was it? This wasn't HQ. This wasn't Los Angeles. We had left Jude in Los Angeles.
"Do you know where you are?"
Cole asked, crouching down in front of me. He waited for me to nod before continuing.
"I'm sorry to wake you up the way I did. I know you're not supposed to, but I saw you pass by and then you started screaming. I didn't realize you had those kinds of pipes, kid."
I barely heard him. "I was sleepwalking?"
"Seems like it,"
he said, not unkindly.
"What did you cut your hand on?"
I shrugged, my throat aching. "What time is it?"
"It's about 5 in the morning.
The lines around Cole's mouth were so much more pronounced. Now that the flush was fading from his face, the shadows were returning, under his eyes, under his high cheekbones, the new beard growth along his jaw.
"You made off with about 5 hours of sleep."
"More than you," I pointed out.
"Yeah, well, I decided to try running from my nightmares instead of diving into them head first."
The screen on the treadmill he'd been using was still flashing, paused.
"Got too much adrenaline, too many thoughts knocking around my skull. Energy to burn."
I finally came back fully into the present when my ears picked up the soft voice of a broadcaster coming from the TV bolted to the wall. The room's smell flooded my nose. Plastic, sweat, and metal finally driving out the stench of blood. Cole gave me a shrewd look, studying me for a moment with a look like he recognized something in me I didn't necessarily know was there myself. Unlike Kate, unlike Liam, unlike Chubbs, unlike Jude, he simply let what had happened drop at our feet. There was no pressing about how I was feeling or what I'd seen, and that was exactly what I wanted, to push it behind me and leave it there. He pulled the towel away from my palm, inspecting the cut.
"Looks pretty shallow," he announced, rising to his feet. "Already healing. It'll probably sting like a bitch for a while, though."
Finished with me, he lifted his shirt to wipe the sweat from his face, giving me a flash of toned skin I hadn't asked for. I looked away. "Are you here every morning?"
"All 2 days we've been here," he said, amused. "Trying to get my ass back in shape. It's been a while since I trained. Helps, too, to get the..."
He made a vague gesture with his hand.
"To blow off steam."
"I miss it," I heard myself say, feeling strong. "I just feel like we know where we're going, you and me. But I can't shake the feeling that I'm just spinning and spinning and spinning, waiting to get there. And damn it, the research on the cause of IAAN... I can't get over what a goddamn waste it is that, after everything, we can't even have that. I used to be able to handle things. I'm not..." I lifted my hand.
"Obviously, that's not the case these days." "Yeah, and what are you going to do about it?"
Cole tucked his arms against his chest.
"You recognize the problem. How are you going to fix it? Stop thinking about the flash drive, the cause. Don't waste your energy on regret or self-pity. If that road is closed to us, we'll focus on figuring out the cure. So, again, tell me, what are you going to do about it?"
"Train," I said. "We'll have to train all of the kids. We're going to need them to be able to fight."
"You're not training anyone until you get yourself in shape."
Was that an offer? A slow smile spread across his face.
"Why? Think your monster can keep up with mine?"
I thought mine could run circles around his, tie his into knots.
There's no simple fix, if that's what you're thinking,
Cole said, tilting his head toward the treadmill.
I get strong, and I get fast, so if I can't fight the monsters off, at least I can run them out of my head for a little while.
When was the last time you trained seriously?
Before... Jesus, when was the last time? A week before I left to find Liam?
The training at HQ had been brutal at first, the very definition of an uphill battle, one that was fought with limp, weak limbs. I'd had blisters on my feet and the heels of my palms, and the endless string of bruises had made me look like I'd been in a major car accident. The pain had flared and pulled and twisted me, like it was reshaping my body to its own standards. Most of the kids had been in the program long enough to hone their bodies for ops at the same time they were trying to sharpen their size skills. It meant weightlifting and cardio every other day, with self-defense, kickboxing, and weapons training thrown into the mix for variety. When you're working that hard, you're focusing on every movement your body is making, trying to train each and every muscle to be as sharp as a knife. You get out of your head for a little while. There had been a window of time when it had all come together for me. I'd been strong, mentally and physically, and more than a little driven to see each op through. And somehow, in the process of looking for Liam, I'd managed to lose that piece of myself. I'd let the doubt back in, the insecurity. I'd lost control of myself.
I want to be pushed harder than the instructors worked us, I told him. I can't keep falling apart and waiting for everyone around me to put the broken pieces back together. I want to take care of everyone.
Cole held up his hands.
I get it.
You don't, I said, hating the edge of desperation in my voice. It's like every time I turn a corner, I find myself right back in that tunnel with all the walls collapsing, and it feels like...
Nope.
Cole stood.
We're not going to sit around holding hands and use the Kate Connor method of coping. Art therapy with finger painting.
He crossed the room in two long strides and dug through a blue plastic bin to retrieve an old, worn pair of sparring gloves. He tossed them my way. Cole crossed his arms, but didn't relax his posture in the slightest. I slid them on without hesitation or consideration for my hand and was rewarded with a nod of approval that warmed me at my center. If I was ready, he was ready. He pulled out a pair of gloves for himself. There was a stretch of black mats on the far side of the room, and I crossed over to them. Plastic, sweat, rubber. It was a familiar smell. I took in a deep breath of it and set my stance, letting my weight sink into what little give the mats offered.
Just so you know, Cole said, knocking his gloved hands together as he turned around. Getting strong means taking hits. A lot of them. You ever act like it's too much or you can't get your ass off the ground, then this is over.
Fine, I said, as long as you don't pull back because you think I can't take it. He snorted.
And, Jim, one last thing. You don't tell anyone what we're doing. Not Connor, not Vida, not Lee, not any of them.
Who the hell cared if we trained together?
Let's see if you can actually hit me first, I taunted.
But his eyes were still grave, darkened by something I didn't understand.
Are you embarrassed or something?
Let's just say I doubt they'd approve of this method of coping, he said, one foot sliding back, his hands up to guard his face.
His voice was so quiet, I almost didn't hear it.
They don't burn, do they? Not like us.
His fist flew out and clipped the side of my temple. I staggered back, but stayed on my feet. Anger, at myself for not paying attention, at the flash of pain, flooded through me. His lips twisted into a smile as I threw an arm out toward him, and he stopped, correcting the motion, forcing me to do it again and again until I landed the hit the exact way he wanted me to. Cole gave a playful punch to my shoulder and was still grinning when he lashed a foot out and I caught it with mine. He bounced back, driving another hit to my center. Minutes flew by, and I seemed to move with them. My body's muscles remembered how to fight, even if my heart had bowed out of the game.
A hot rush of exhilaration went through me as I blocked a blow and landed a hit square in his stomach. His breath escaped in half a laugh, half a gasp of pain. By the time he remembered he was supposed to be teaching me, we were already flat on our backs on the mats, trying to catch our breath. No, I thought, reaching up to wipe the sweat-slick hair out of my eyes. Not like us. Hours later, with my muscles like jelly and the fog of my nightmare cleared from my mind, we gathered in the rec room to officially begin planning the camp hits. I surveyed our group, including one last newly arrived car, which had rolled in while I was rinsing off in the showers after training with Cole. The kids, all four of them, were valiantly fighting through their exhaustion, explaining that they'd been held up by car problems, when Cole strolled in behind me and gave me a gentle push forward toward the circle of kids sitting on the floor. I reared back slightly, confused, but his smile was encouraging.
"It's just what we talked about, remember? Give them the rundown."
"Shouldn't you?"
"No, it should be you."
He nudged me toward them again, ignoring the narrow expression on Chubbs's face.
"Go get 'em, Jim."
"Make them love you." I shook my head, ignoring the purr of Clancy's voice in my ear. Zeus scooted back and motioned for Hina and Tommy to do the same, opening the circle. "So this," I began, only to catch myself. Suddenly, it wasn't about the faces that were there, but the ones that weren't. I turned to Chubbs, who was plucking at a hole in his jeans, the perfect picture of forced nonchalance. "Where's Liam? And Kylie? And James?"
"They must be in the bathroom,"
he managed to squeeze out, his voice unnaturally high. Then, all of a sudden, no one could look at me. Not even Zoo. "You didn't, Liam," I thought, fighting against the steady rise of panic. "Tell me you didn't rush out to get supplies without even taking a weapon to protect yourself." "They left," a small voice whispered. I looked around, but didn't catch who it had come from.
"Who left?" Cole said, catching the tail end of this. "One of..."
I knew the moment that he spotted who, exactly, was missing. He went still, his expression controlled and blank. It was the look of someone just before they calmly and methodically stabbed someone.
"Why did they leave?"
I asked.
"So we would have something to eat today,"
Chubb snapped.
"Where did they go?"
I had to keep myself from shouting, from reaching over and shaking him as hard as I could. "The next town over," Lucy said. "They promised they'd be back in an hour."
"Did they?"
Cole ground the words out.
"Well, if they get their asses killed, that'll at least bring the average IQ of this place up." "Do not,"
he addressed the whole group now,
"go outside until you've had the training you need to survive, and until we're stocked with weapons. I'm going to take care of everything, and we're going to take care of each other. But you have to listen to what I tell you, otherwise this won't work. All right, guys?"
Several nods, several affirmative noises.
"Okay,"
I said.
"Damn it, Liam, what were you thinking?"
"All right." I forced my mind to click back onto the right track. "The first thing you need to know is that the flash drive containing the research Cole stole from LitaCorp about whatever caused IAAN was wiped by the EMP. Vida must have told Chubbs and Zoo this because they didn't look nearly as rattled as the others did. Seeing their faces, a sharp stab of hopelessness hit me at my center. I pushed past it again, aware of Cole's eyes on my back.
"There's no way to get it back?"
Tommy asked.
"No," Nico said. "We've tried everything. The files are gone."
"We still have the research on the cure, though," I said quickly. The Greens had copied it down again and uploaded it into our lone laptop. All 15 indecipherable pages of it.
"And we'll work from there. But in the meantime, I think we should move forward with freeing the camps. It's the right thing to do, and our strongest strategy to hold Gray accountable for what's happened to us.
But I motioned back to Cole. "There's no way we can do this alone.
so I have to ask. Are you guys with us? It's okay if you're afraid or you don't want to participate in the ops. It really is, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. There's so much to do here that you'll still be a part of it. Or, once it's a little safer, we can find a way for you to go home to your parents. I waited until they were nodding or had voiced their consent. The best way to do this, then, is to think through a potential plan for a camp hit together. Can we break up into smaller groups, maybe 4 or 5 kids each, and just start thinking about how we could pull something like this off? It doesn't matter if it seems crazy or if we don't have the materials we need now. Just be creative, and we'll run from there. I let them divvy themselves up and was proud of the way they mixed the old league teams with the new arrivals we'd picked up along with Zoo. Cole slapped a hand on my shoulder, grinning his approval, as he began making his rounds. I smiled back, feeling light enough to jump from the floor to the rafters above. And just like that, the sensation was gone. A silent, heavy presence came up behind me, falling over me like a shadow. I didn't need to turn to know it was Chubbs. Irritation crept in the longer he punished me with that oppressive silence. I turned away, watching Vida perched like a queen in the middle of a group containing Tommy, Pat, and 2 other league kids. They crowned her with praise and wonder and adoration for a good 3 minutes before she deigned to give her input to their proposal.
"When are you going to start looping us in on these things earlier?" Chubbs finally asked. "It feels like you're springing things on us because you know we'll disagree with something."
I blew out the breath I'd been holding through my nostrils, returning his hard stare with one of my own. "It sounds like the real issue here is that you don't trust me to make good calls without you." Cole had warned me this would happen. He'd told me that I had too many voices weighing in on my choices, and that was why I never felt fully secure in making them. They told me over and over that they trusted me, that they had faith. Clearly, that wasn't actually the case.
"Why did you let Liam go out?" I demanded. "He wasn't even armed."
He threw his hands up into the air.
"They're freaking blues."
"Oh my God, Ruby, you have to..." "Look, never mind. It's not..."
"I have to what?"
Chubbs gave me a narrow look when I turned right back on him.
"Okay. Look," he said, beginning with a deep breath. "However you want to define what's between you and Lee, that's none of my business. And honestly, it's stressful trying to keep up with the circles you run around each other. It becomes my business when one of my best friends starts treating the other the way you've been treating him lately."
"What do you mean?"
"Holding him at arm's length. You're just here, but not here, you know," he said. "Even when you're with us, you're not even really present. You zone out, you dodge topics, you hold back, and every once in a while you'll just disappear. Is there something else you're not telling us?"
"You've been so busy picking apart everything I do, but you don't seem to have any idea what that is."
"I'm disappearing?" I said. "Try training to make sure I don't make an ass out of myself getting these kids in shape. Try planning to make sure no one gets hurt or killed. Try dealing with Clancy because no one else can."
My voice had dropped to a furious whisper, and the force of it had clearly stunned him. He reached out, taking my shoulder, his expression going soft as mine went hard. I hated the way he was studying me.
"I just want you to talk to us," he said. "I know it can't be like before, but I miss it. I miss..."
Chubb shook his head.
"I didn't mean to jump down your throat."
"Well, you did," I said with a sigh.
"Because you needed to hear it from someone," Chubb said. "From my perspective, you've thrown your hat in with the asshole brother, which, fine, but don't forget who's been pushing for these camp hits to happen basically from the second we arrived at East River. Don't you remember? Liam thought he had it all figured out and was all Lee-like because he was working and making a difference and seeing some kind of result in the kids around him. You have to let him do something, Ruby." What I want to know is, are you upset that Liam went out without getting your permission?
I shook my head in disbelief, thoughts as tangled as my feelings. Because it's dangerous. Because he could be captured or killed, and I can't...
The words choked off, and I was surprised by the rush of emotion that slammed into me. Frustration, anger, and above all, fear. I can't lose another person.
Chubbs let out a long breath and tucked me into his arms, giving me his usual awkward but caring pats. I pressed my hands against his back, holding him tighter, remembering the rush of elation I'd felt when I'd seen him for the first time in months and finally known that he'd survived. The texture of the memory had changed, becoming like a fading sunbeam. He wasn't saying any of this to be accusatory or cruel. He just wanted us to be safe and together. But he wasn't thinking that far into the future. Chubbs's whole focus was on our little circle, but mine couldn't be. Not anymore. I had to fight against that instinct and consider everyone.
He's just one person, I know, but he's our person, he said, like he'd read my thoughts. And the truth is, I think we need to be focused on Zoo. We have to try to get the full story out of her about what happened to that guy she was traveling with. I don't think it's going to be as simple as waiting until she's ready to talk about it.
I nodded, leaning back against the wall, watching her as she sat between Hina and Lucy. Her eyes were focused on the floor, her hands folded neatly in her lap, her legs tucked under her.
It wasn't a mistake to bring them here, was it? I asked. The young ones? I won't let them fight, but I can't shake the feeling that this is going to hurt them in ways I can't see yet.
We can't protect them from this, not if we're determined to give them a choice. That's what this is really about, isn't it? Giving them and the next wave of kids a shot at a better life than what we had? To come out of hiding?
Yes, that was it exactly. The freedom that came hand in hand with being able to make choices about our lives once our abilities were gone. The freedom to live where we wanted to, with whomever we wanted to, and to not be scared of every passing shadow. For kids not to grow up with the fear that one day they might not wake up from their sleep, or that they'd blink out like a light bulb in the middle of an otherwise normal day. I knew, just as Cole did, that the only way we were going to come out of the other side of this successfully was through force, a real fight. But the cost. I looked around again, taking in the sight of their animated faces, and tried to absorb their faint chatter and laughter to ease the grip of fear around my ribs. I couldn't have both, could I? I couldn't get my battle without acknowledging that there was a damn decent chance that not all of these kids would live to benefit from winning.
I want it so bad, Ruby. I want to go home, see my parents, and walk around my neighborhood in broad daylight. I want to go to school, so even if they hold my abilities over me, they can't deny me things because I'm not educated. That's enough for me. I know it's not going to be easy, and I know I'm going to be lucky to make it through alive. But it's worth it, if I can just have that.
Chubbs was quiet for a moment before saying quietly,
"Everything will be worth it, and we're going to be around to see it."
That's not very team reality of you. His smile matched mine.
Screw team reality. I'm leaving to join Team Sanity.
An hour later, Liam and the others appeared at the entrance to the tunnel, each dragging in a large cardboard box or plastic tub. Their voices carried down the long pathway, bubbling over with excitement. Clearly, they didn't know what was waiting for them at the other end. Liam appeared first, his face and hands covered in a fine layer of dust, his hair hopelessly mussed by the growling windstorm outside. The sight of him, tousled and laughing and looking so happy, made me forget why I'd been so angry in the first place. It didn't have the same effect on his brother. Cole was on his feet, bracing his shoulder against the wall to the right of the entrance. He hadn't said a word, but his breathing had grown harsher over the last hour. Even with his arms crossed over his chest,
He couldn't hide the way his fingers on his right hand were convulsing every few minutes. It was one spark away from explosion. I saw that clear enough. And still, I wasn't fast enough jumping up to my feet. Liam had a half second of joy to see me sitting there, and then Cole had him. His arm shot out, gripping him by the front of his shirt and whirling him around to slam him up against the wall. The box in Liam's hands crashed to the ground, sending the cans and bags inside skidding in every direction. A bright red box of Lucky Charms cereal slid right over to me, stopping just short of my feet.
"Jesus Christ!"
Liam choked out, but Cole was already hauling him away into Alban's old office. I caught the door before it was kicked shut in my face. Liam was practically thrown into the large scuffed desk.
"What the hell is your problem?"
Liam gasped, still winded. Cole had a few inches on his brother, but Liam's anger seemed to stretch his spine and even out the difference. They never looked more alike than they did right then, seconds away from ripping each other's heads off.
"My problem? Try finding out a kid's gone out to get himself and two other kids killed. Are you really that stupid?"
Cole rounded on him, cutting a furious hand through the air.
"I hope it was worth it. I hope you got to feel good about pretending to be a hero again, because you just jeopardized the whole operation. Someone could have followed you back to us. Someone could be monitoring the building right now."
Liam's temper finally broke over him. He shoved Cole back against the empty bookshelf behind him and pinned him there with an arm barred across his chest.
"Play the hero? You mean what you've been doing this whole damn time? Walking around, barking out orders like you have any right to lead these kids? Like you know how they feel, or what they've been through?"
Cole let out a derisive laugh, and for a moment, I really thought he'd tell his brother his secret, if only to throw it all back in Liam's face, get the shocked and horrified reaction he'd been afraid of for so long.
"I got it done," spat Liam. "We weren't followed. No one ever saw us. I've done this 100 times in a hell of a lot worse places, and each time I got it done, which I would have told you if you'd treated me like I was capable of doing something besides sitting around with my thumb up my ass, waiting for someone to take care of me."
He was right. Of anyone here, he had the most experience doing this kind of hit. The security team at East River had kept everyone fed and stocked with medicine and clothes simply by preying on truck shipments along a nearby highway.
"Why are you acting like you actually care?"
Liam pressed, his voice edged with frustration.
"You ignore my existence for years, going around thinking..." "You have no idea what I'm thinking,"
Cole snarled, finally throwing him off.
"You want to know? Really? I'll tell you. It was, how am I going to tell Mom another one of her kids is dead?"
The words seemed to suck every last trace of air out of the room. The color in Liam's face drained and his clenched jaw went utterly slack.
"You made me tell her. Remember that? You couldn't stop crying. Couldn't even leave Claire's room. I had to go downstairs and stop her because she was already making her sandwich and getting her lunch bag ready for school."
I pressed a hand over my mouth. The image was too painful for me to even bring to mind. Liam stumbled back, blindly bumping into the desk. His hand caught the edge of it, and it was enough to keep him upright. I saw his face, stricken, only for a moment. It disappeared again behind his hands.
"Sorry. God, I'm sorry. I didn't think. I just wanted to do something."
After seeing so many varying shades of his anger, I was surprised to see that Cole could turn his voice and face so frighteningly cold.
"The only reason you're here is because I don't know where the hell Mom and Harry have holed up, and I can't ship you straight to them." "What?"
Liam had always been an easy read. Every thought that passed through his mind at some point or another registered on his face. It had been so easy, even for a damaged girl terrified out of her mind, to trust that what he said, he meant. That when he offered something to you, it was only with the purest intention of wanting to give it to you. No catches, no takebacks, no favors.
I used to wonder how painful it would be to have a heart that felt things so deeply. Even the most secret of things could never fully be contained. I just wished like hell he hadn't looked up at the mention of their parents, because the moment Cole saw his face, he knew. And so did I. Liam didn't tell Cole, I thought, unable to understand it. Liam and Cole had both known their mother and stepfather had assumed fake names, Della and Jim Goodkind, when they went into hiding and left their home in North Carolina. But searching online and through phone books had brought up dead end after dead end. Cole should have been the first person he told after Zoo told us how she'd met their mother. Liam should have stood up from the table and gone to find his brother immediately.
You know!
This time, Cole did hit him, the icy demeanor shattering as he landed a blow on Liam's chin.
You lied to my goddamn face! Where are they?
Cut it out! I shouted. Stop it, both of you! Liam lurched toward him. I saw his arm pull back, the glint in Cole's eyes, and shot forward. I slid between them just as Liam threw his punch, barely blocking it before it collided with Cole's stomach. There was a single instant he seemed to strain against it, still struggling to land the hit. And then he came back to himself, to the moment. I saw it happen, the anguish and resentment released with a sharp inhalation and a horrified look. I had to grab a fistful of his shirt to prevent his immediate instinct toward a panicked escape. The other hand was thrown out toward Cole to warn him off moving.
Oh, my God,
Liam said hoarsely.
Why did you? That was so stupid.
I unclenched my fingers, sliding my hand around to his back as I stepped in close to his side. He was still breathing hard, fighting to keep his emotions from boiling over again. I should have realized how quickly shame would work its way through him. He wasn't a fighter, not by nature. Damn it, the thought of hurting anyone he cared about would do far more damage to him than Cole's fist ever could have.
Liam should be quartermaster, I said.
Cole crossed his arms over his chest.
That's
a great idea, I said. You're welcome. He does know where your parents are, and will happily fill you in on the details, now.
As a trade?
Cole shook his head, giving his brother a dubious look.
Do you even know what a quartermaster is?
Of course I do, Liam said between gritted teeth. I know you try to forget, but I was part of the league for a few months. It's not a trade, I said. It's because he'll do the best job out of anyone here. It's a role that needs to be filled and fast. It's because you're brothers and you love each other and should respect each other's capabilities and focus your energy on the actual fight in front of us, not each other. Am I wrong?
Jim, it has never been more obvious than now that you're an only child. The joys of siblinghood have never played well with logic.
It was a huge job to track our supplies and bear the responsibility for figuring out how to bring new ones in. I would have stopped to second-guess the decision if I hadn't seen with my own eyes that he could manage it. Cole, I said softly, making Liam tense all over again. He's already been doing it.
It's not a matter of whether or not he can do it, but if he deserves it,
Cole fired back.
He disobeyed a direct order not to leave the premises, and he acted without permission. Oh, right, I forgot you elected yourself leader,
Liam said, and the ugliness in his voice made me actually cringe.
So glad we got a vote on that. What, were you afraid someone would question why you had any qualifications for the job? What you knew about us and our lives? Or was that another decision the two of you made and kept from the rest of us, hoping we'd all just nod and trail behind you like little mice?
I stepped away from him, stung more by his tone than his words. Cole had the opposite response. He came closer, stepping right up into his brother's face. To his credit, Liam didn't flinch. Not until Cole said,
"My qualifications? Try not getting 105 kids killed with a naively planned and poorly executed escape attempt from a camp that wasn't even that bad in the first place."
Out of line,
I warned Cole, feeling my own temper flare now. The fact that you consider any camp to be not even that bad shows you have no idea what you're talking about. The two of you, you want to punish me. Liam cut me off, pushing me back from where I'd stepped between them. A wash of furious red worked its way up his neck to his face. Both he and his voice were shaking.
Fine. Name it. If you want to throw your weight around, just do it. I'm done with you wasting my time.
I sent a sharp look of warning to Cole, but he was already saying,
clean the bathrooms with bleach.
I'd seen Cole wear a smirk countless times at this point, but I'd never seen it on Liam's face. That baiting, haughty look.
It's already done. Clear out the backup in the sewage system. Already done. Laundry, a month, by yourself. You let them steal all of the sheets and towels, Liam said, in case you manage to forget.
Cole released a loud breath through his nostrils, his eyes narrowing. Something clearly clicked because his mouth tensed into a tight-lipped smile.
Then you can clean out and organize the garage.
I whirled back toward him, confused.
The what?
He didn't say anything else, just strode to the door and held it open. I caught Liam watching my reaction out of the corner of my eye as he went first, but the only thing I saw as we followed Cole downstairs was his back. He kept two steps ahead of me the entire time and didn't once turn to make sure I was still there. The unnerved feeling I had expanded into confusion as we moved through the kitchen. I could see my pale face reflected in the stainless steel surfaces as we passed by the sinks, stove, oven, and finally the pantry, until we hit the wall of metal shelves used to store pots, pans, and baking sheets. The muscles in Cole's arms flexed as he dragged the shelves away from the wall. The metal protested against the linoleum they'd used to tile the floor, but once the shelves were set aside, I had a clear view of what it had been hiding.
Really? I said, exasperated. Another hidden door.
Liam finally looked at me, brows lifting.
There are others? It's not hidden, Cole said, stepping into the dark hall.
He felt along the wall until the lights flickered on, revealing yet another damp concrete tunnel.
We stopped using the space and just left it alone. I'm thinking this will be our emergency exit. It'll be important to make sure the kids know where it is.
What was it used for before? I asked, more to fill the silence than anything. I was walking between them, eyes tracking Cole's powerful, purposeful strides forward, the way his wide shoulders moved beneath his shirt. My mind was on Liam, though, the way frustration seemed to pour off him, clouding the air around us. He trailed behind me now, and I felt his eyes working over me as clearly as if he'd reached out and tugged my braid. Our shuffling steps and breathing echoed around us, and somehow were amplified by an unpleasant feeling that the two of them were one scathing word away from slamming each other up against the wall and beating one another senseless.
We used it to run op simulations, which is one reason it needs to be cleared out. Any strike against a camp has to be worked through and choreographed,
Cole explained.
Then it became a kind of storage unit for all the crap we acquired over the years.
Fantastic, Liam muttered. I don't suppose there's anything actually useful in there.
Cole shrugged.
Guess you're gonna find out, baby brother.
In response, Liam only grunted. I reached back, slowing my steps, suddenly unable to escape the thought that it was me he was angriest at. That Liam would feel like I hadn't stood up for him enough upstairs. That not telling him about Cole's and my plan had hurt him more deeply than I'd expected. I reached back for his hand, wanting the security of his touch, to comfort him, apologize, to just be, and be with him next to me. I hadn't even looked to see that he was okay. He was mentally banged up now, but I hadn't checked for bruises, bumps, cuts, and nothing. My hand hung in the cold air. Nothing. God, he was mad. Furious, maybe.
A painful knot formed in my chest, and I pulled my hand back, drawing it closer to my side in a last-ditch effort to protect myself from the raw feeling of rejection. Liam caught my fingers, but instead of weaving his through mine, he pressed a kiss there and crossed the last two steps between us so we could walk next to each other. He looped an arm over my shoulder and didn't pull away when I stepped in closer to his side. I ran my hand along his back, up and down, until I felt the tight muscles there ease. When he looked down at me, his expression had softened enough that I felt the sudden urge to stand on my toes and press a soft, quick kiss to his jaw. So I did. He ducked his head, trying to hide his little pleased smile. It was the first time I felt myself relax since he came strolling back in through the tunnel. We're okay, I thought. This is okay. In total, it was about a 5-minute walk from one door to the other. Stairs waited for us at the other end, and I realized with a start that we were heading back above ground. The door waiting at the top of the stairs looked to have been hammered out of solid metal, and though the door hadn't been locked, Cole still had to drive his shoulder into it in order to get it unstuck from its frame. He stumbled in with the force of his momentum. The smirk on Liam's face fell away the moment we stepped inside. It was clear we were standing in one of the nearby warehouses, one of the many identical long white buildings that seemed a dime a dozen in this part of Lodi. It looked to be roughly the same dimensions as the ranch, but one level, and decidedly less livable. Concrete, metal rafters. Windows lined the top of the wall, coated in dust and darkened by blackout sheets. The lights hanging from the rafters sputtered to life, illuminating the towering mounds of junk piled up around us. There were no walls or offices, let alone heat or insulation, from what I could tell. It was simply an unfinished garage. There were a few actual cars inside, their stripped-down bodies, really, and all of them propped up on lifts. Liam walked toward the nearest one, crouching down to inspect the engine and innards on the floor beneath it. All of the tires and hubcaps seemed to be lining the loading dock door, which had been secured several times over by metal chains and locks. For the most part, though, it was a bizarre assortment of things. Broken bed frames, sleeping bags, bags of screws and nails. I moved to open one of the nearby garbage bags, half afraid of what I'd find inside, but it was only crumpled old clothes they'd probably ripped off from a donation drop-off. The smell in here was vaguely sour, tinged with exhaust and oil. Dust flew thick and heavy, forcing me to wave it away from my face in order to breathe. There didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to how the league had stacked and sorted. I felt the first spark of temper hit me and turned to find Cole walking across the building. Liam stood, his hands on his hips, eyes lit with something I didn't understand. He didn't seem daunted in the slightest now that the initial shock had worn off. There was an eagerness in its place. Somehow he was seeing something I wasn't, some sort of potential. I mostly just saw red. "This is a huge job," I called after his brother. "Cole, he's not going to do it by himself."
"Obviously," Cole hollered back. "He's allowed to take some of the younger kids who won't be training. His bosom buddy, the one that always looks like he's got a bug up his ass."
I started after him. "They're not going to do this for you overnight. We should all be helping." A clatter of metal against the concrete made me look back. Liam had moved on from the car to a nearby pile of bikes that were tangled together like brambles. He picked through frames and spokes and wheels, working carefully, trying to get down to whatever he'd seen under them. I stepped over a downed floor lamp to help him. I saw a flash of silver, then my fingers brushed against a tire. Liam let out a breathless laugh, working twice as fast now, his smile practically contagious. "What is it?" I asked as we hauled it upright. "A dirt bike?" He was vibrating with excitement, his hands flying over its sleek body, brushing away the dirt and dust.
"Oh, man," he breathed out. "She's a beauty, isn't she?"
I'll take your word for it, I said. It looked like a hybrid of a dirt bike and a motorcycle. Apparently, I wasn't that far off, because Liam explained, talking fast,
It's a dual-sport motorcycle. It has the capabilities of a dirt bike for off-roading, but see? It has mirrors and a speedometer for streets. It looks like it's a...
Yeah, a Suzuki.
Wow, I'm kind of freaking out.
I know, I laughed. I can tell. Do you think it'll actually run? Liam was inspecting it with reverent hands, stroking its every inch.
It looks like it's in decent shape. They beat the hell out of it. Didn't treat her nice. Might be an easy fix.
He looked up and saw my expression.
What?
Do you actually know how to ride?
Do I know how to ride?
Liam scoffed, leaning over the bike seat so his face was inches from mine. His pale blue eyes were electric with his excitement. They sent a charge through me, dissolving the rest of the world into peaceful, quiet static. That last bit of distance must have been as unbearable to him as it was to me, because his fingers came down over where my hands rested on the busted leather seat. I felt his touch spread over my skin like late afternoon sunshine. His lips skimmed my cheek, his breath warm against my ear, as he said in low, honeyed tones,
Not only can I ride, darling, but I can give you a few pointers. Hey, Hell's Angels, Cole barked. I didn't bring you in here to shop around for yourselves. Get your asses over here.
Liam's expression clouded over as he pulled back, the fluttering excitement vanishing like a candle blown out with a single breath. I must have looked as disappointed as I felt, letting out a small sound of irritation, because just like that, he was smiling again as he tucked a loose strand of hair back over my ear. A softer, smaller smile than before, but one meant for me. It warmed me down to my bones. After a moment of making sure the kickstand would hold the dirt bike up, he used his shirt to wipe the grime from his hands. I took the hand he offered, giving it a squeeze. With one last glance over his shoulder at his find, we made our way to where Cole stood in front of a towering stack of pallets. We were right behind him when I finally made the connection and realized what we were looking at. I'd seen cardboard boxes like this before and recognized the phrasing printed along the outside. 10x24 hours rations, GP NATO, OTAN approved.
What are we looking at exactly?
Liam asked. Humanitarian rations, I said, cutting Cole off. I felt hollow at the sight. Do you know what country they're from?
You've seen these before? Cole asked, brows raised. The government has this stuff under lock and key. They didn't take any of this crap to HQ either.
It was in... I released Liam's hand, stepping closer to the boxes so I wouldn't have to see his face as I said, It was when we were in Nashville. The military was housing food and medical supplies in an old airport hangar. The raid was like a night tide in my memory. It constantly seeped up from the darkest corners of my mind to catch me off guard, lay me low. Liam, so pale as he struggled to breathe, the knife in my back... Jude's quiet bravery as he stepped out in front of all of us and sent electricity shooting toward the soldiers. Losing sight of the others. Rob.
The muzzle.
Blood on a broken windshield. I turned my back on the boxes and pallets, but forced myself to stand still until the crushing weight lifted off my chest and I could breathe again. It was getting harder to outrun its reach.
Okay, Liam said finally. But where did this stuff come from? And how old is it? A few years, but most of this stuff is non-perishable. Meant to last. I just forgot it was here until I saw an inventory list in the office.
Cole pulled a small knife out of his back pocket and flicked the blade out. He gutted the box, letting the red, individually wrapped packages of food spill out at our feet. There was a simple image of a man bringing food to his mouth and a Chinese flag.
We heard rumors that the government was trying to hide humanitarian aid other countries were airdropping. That whole, we're America, we can do it ourselves, everyone else has abandoned us bullshit. This load was left somewhere in Nevada.
You never used them? I asked.
Never had to, Cole said. We had food suppliers. Alban wanted it as evidence of how Gray was working against the public, but nothing ever came from it. This building is filled with half-baked ideas, lost trains of thought.
He shut his eyes, rubbing his forehead with the back of his hand. I saw the way his grim expression seemed to twist with pain in the second before he turned to Liam.
If you get this place in order, then fine. Consider yourself quartermaster. You can figure out a way to bring in supplies.
Supplies meaning food, cleaning supplies, sundries, Liam said.
If you're thinking that I have a way of getting you guns... No shit, kid, Cole interrupted. We're going to have to work Senator Cruz's connections for gas, weapons, and the mountain of ammunition we'll need.
Exactly how much do you think that'll be? Liam asked, alarmed.
We're fighting, what, one or two key battles? Not a whole damn war.
You worry your pretty little head about breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Cole fired back. Let the big kids do the hard thinking.
I sent him a withering look he ignored, and he stooped to pick up one of the daily ration packs from the ground. He tossed it from hand to hand, his forehead creased in thought.
But it doesn't solve the bigger issue we have now. Based on the plans that are coming out of that room, we're going to need a lot more bodies working with us. Another 2 dozen kids at least for a camp hit. If you have any bright ideas on how to find them, I'm all ears.
A tired kind of resignation wove in and out of my thoughts, overriding the worst of my reservations. I must have sighed, because both of the stewards turned to me, mirror images of interest.
Actually, I said, my voice betraying the unsettling certainty working its way through me.
I think I do.
9. With the kids occupied with their planning, it wasn't difficult to slip downstairs unnoticed. I didn't need to look over my shoulder again and again to ensure that no one was watching as I unlocked the door of the old file storage room and stepped inside. It was how quickly my hand shot up to find the light fixture's cord dangling overhead, the way the darkness seemed to settle over my skin that made me stop myself. My breathing sounded harsh to my ears, and it was the strangest sensation, feeling my body slip into panic while my mind sat far back at a cool, reserved distance. My heart galloped, pounding out a beat that was too fast, too hard. Sounds that weren't there filled my ears. The world rolled up under me. Wasn't it just the way of the dark that with one sense gone, the others were amplified? The dark made small prickles of anxiety stretch and reshape to suit its needs, to trap you there, paralyzed. No wonder Jude had been so terrified of shadows. In a space this small, it was easy to imagine there was no escape. The rational part of me knew that there was nothing to be afraid of. There were 2 doors, 2 outs, but the only way through the darkness was to lean into it and just move. I could tell myself 1,000 times, but each time my whole self would feel the shock of it all over again, because the dark was where things were lost. It devoured everything good. This is not Los Angeles. I pressed back against the memory of dust and smoke. This is not the tunnel. I pressed back against Jude's face, his pleading voice. This is now. I pressed. And pressed and pressed. I stayed there as long as I could physically stand it before tugging on the cord. The pale yellow light flooded the air around me, revealing the clouds of loose dust kicked up from the barren shelves, rising, falling, spinning. I focused on that until my breathing evened back out, and there was nothing to be afraid of besides the monster on the other side of the door. It didn't matter how long I needed to refocus and steel myself. It was time well spent. Going in with scattered, distracted thoughts would be like walking into the room and handing Clancy Gray a loaded gun. And this time, I hadn't brought Cole back up with me. He was flat on his back on the cot again, throwing something, a plastic sandwich bag crumpled into a ball,
up into the air, catching it, throwing, catching, throwing, catching, all while whistling the cheeriest little tune. At the sound of the door's lock clicking back into place, he caught it one last time and craned his neck to look at me.
"I have a theory I'd like to have confirmed," he said. "The agents who were here left, didn't they?"
"They're around," I lied.
"Strange, then, that I haven't heard them. Just the kids."
He pointed to the air vent above him by way of explanation.
"They must have been gone before you even arrived. And the others, what, they abandoned you? Just didn't show up?"
My silence must have been confirmation enough.
"That's fantastic news!"
His voice was so genuine, so excited.
"You're better off without them. Is the plan still to attack the camps? Did you find the information on Thurmond?"
There it was again. He kept dropping the same little bomb, waiting for me to pick it up, to agonize over it. I crossed my arms over my chest to hide the way my hands couldn't seem to stop trembling.
"What about it? What's happening?"
"Clancy, you really want to pretend we're on the same team?"
"Aren't I basically the mascot?"
he said, his mouth curving in an imitation of a smile.
"Try to avoid insulting me if you're coming in here looking for me to do you a favor. Don't think for a second I don't know that you need me to help you track down more kids for your adorable little brigade. If you want the information, you'll have to retrieve it yourself."
My patience had been worn down to the width of dental floss in the span of 2 minutes. Clancy Gray got off on driving people to the edge and watching them throw themselves over, though, so I wasn't going to give him the pleasure.
"Where did you leave the files?
Colorado? Back in Virginia?"
"Not files, and closer than you think,"
he said, raising his eyebrows.
"Come on, don't play dumb. You know exactly what I mean."
I did.
"You really are sick in the head,"
I told him. "You're just going to block me out. Is that how you're going to make yourself feel better about all of this, by watching me embarrass myself?"
"You seemed to manage breaking into my memories just fine in Colorado, and in that Los Angeles rat hole you called HQ. Why no confidence now?"
he taunted. I knew him better than he thought I did. "I'm bored," is what he was really saying. "Entertain me."
"I'm surprised you have confidence left," I said, "considering what happened in Los Angeles.
I really loved seeing all of those precious memories of you and your mom. You were kind of a crybaby, weren't you?" His brows drew together, assessing. For a moment, I wished I hadn't brought up Lillian Gray. It was too early to signal to him that I had an interest in her. Too early to so much as hint she was on my mind. I needed a strategy if I was going to try to suss out her location and what, precisely, her son had done to her. I kept my expression neutral, my breathing even. "You've done it before, Ruby." It was always easier to slide into someone's mind after I'd already created a path there. But both times, I'd had to catch him by surprise to do it. I'd been so damn furious in each case that if my hit had been physical and not mental, I was half convinced I could have taken out a cement wall. He blinked, and I let the invisible hands unfurl at the back of my mind. By the time his dark, thick lashes were rising again and his gaze met mine, their nails had turned to hooks, waiting to latch on. The block from Clancy felt like I'd slammed face first into the glass wall between us. I cringed, fighting with everything I had not to bring a hand up to rub at the center of the pain right between my eyes. A dull headache flared to an outright piercing throb.
"You're rusty," he said, surprised. "That was borderline pathetic. When was the last time you tried this?"
"Shut up," I thought, trying to keep my pride in check.
"Would you rather we talked like this?"
His voice bled through my mind, his lips never so much as twitching. He'd done this to me once before, at East River, as a friendly challenge. The sensation of it was exactly the same. It felt like there were 1,000 moths trapped beneath my skin, their wings brushing and beating until I had the urge to scratch them out by force. I was rusty, but there was a difference between being down and being out. Clancy had to constantly feed his confidence with moments like this in order to support the weight of his ego. I'd been counting on that trademark smugness, his unwillingness to accept that he was anything less than the most powerful person in the room. Come on, asshole. I wanted him to really believe, even for a moment, that my abilities weren't just like a muscle I hadn't flexed in weeks. I wanted him to think I was hopeless. I shook my head, forcing what I hoped was a frustrated, upset expression onto my face. I had the advantage of him already assuming that his blow would be lethal to my own pride. I could see it in his face. He thought he was torturing me by forcing me to use my abilities, and he was enjoying the struggle, relishing the sight of me trying and failing. That was one way to feel powerful while locked up behind 3 inches of bulletproof glass, I guess. My abilities were practically purring inside my skull in anticipation. It took strength I didn't know I had not to laugh, to hold that look of fury and annoyance. I just needed a single moment of him being thrown off balance. Just one. But it was like finding a way to land a hit on a guy standing behind a cinder block wall. As with any fistfight, though, however unfairly stacked it was in one corner, there were tricks. Dirty cheats. I wasn't above it. Not by a long shot. Sorry, couldn't resist. Ready to go again? Clancy crossed his arms over his chest, glaring at me from behind the glass. My only request is that you actually pretend to try. When he smiled again, I smiled right back. This time, I threw my abilities at him like a fist, aiming for the blank white curtain he threw up again to guard his thoughts. I slowed my assault, letting him sweep that same curtain forward to maneuver me right back out of his headspace. His own power brushed against mine like the soft stroke of knuckles against a cheek. I reached over and unlocked the door to his cell, propping it open with my foot. Clancy jerked back, startled, and that great white nothing that had masked everything working behind his eyes lifted, just enough for me to slide into the twisting hallways of his mind. The colors were suddenly vivid as jewels, pristine emerald lawns, a home perched next to a sapphire sea, a flowing amethyst evening gown, camera flashes like the sun striking the surface of a diamond, dissolving the world in flashes of pure light. I worked faster than I ever thought I'd be able to, flipping through each memory as I stepped back and shut the door to his cell again, flipping the heavy lock. The win was short-lived. Clancy's memories and thoughts had always passed through my mind like thunderclouds, expansive, brimming with darkness, and always on the edge of bursting. Now they were overly bright and crisp. Still, too, like I was flipping through a stack of photographs, not trying to navigate the winding, endless paths that each memory sent me on. I felt myself coasting, carried along by a firm grip. Someone else was at the wheel. The cell, detention hall, they were ripped back from the edge of my vision in one sharp tug. A layer of reality gone, just like that. And in its place was an old, familiar scene. Clancy's back was to me as I stepped toward him, letting the room solidify around us. Dark wood everywhere. Shelves that blossomed with books and files. A TV appeared in the corner and burst to life with a flash of silent color. A desk appeared in front of where Clancy sat, his hands poised in the air until the laptop appeared beneath his moving fingers, papers growing up from the surface of his desk in neat white stacks. He must have left the window open. The white curtain he used to separate his bed from the rest of the office fluttered at my back, and the memory was clear enough for the sound of the kids at the fire pit below to drift up to my ears. A soft breeze brought in the damp, earthy scent of the nearby trees. I shuddered. We were at East River. The memory was moving now, throwing me forward with a lurch, but it was only at half speed.
I stepped up behind where Clancy was working, dividing his attention between his father's face on the TV set and the laptop in front of him. I sucked in a sharp breath, and even though the rational part of my mind knew that none of this was real, I wasn't here, and Clancy wasn't actually here, I still couldn't bring myself to touch him, not even to lean over his shoulder. How is he doing this? This wasn't a memory. It was something else entirely. It was walking onto a stage after a play had already begun. I'd crossed whatever barrier had kept me an observer, not a participant. He took a deep breath, unbuttoning the collar of his shirt with one hand, typing in a web address. A password. The Clancy sitting in front of me sank down in his chair, tilting his head back so he was looking up, almost like he was looking right at me.
"Did you get that?"
he asked. I shot out of his mind, dropping the connection before he could seal me in. Was that even possible? Could he? The lights crackled back to life in the hallway, burning my eyes with a sudden intensity. I knew my head was still tripping, still locked in that initial panic, because all I could smell was that pine, the distant campfire smoke. He'd moved back to the bed, reclaiming his makeshift ball. And it was so strange. Once the memory cleared and the ground felt solid under my feet again, I wasn't scared or even pissed off that he'd managed to wrest control away from me in the end. I was curious. I'd never experienced him walking me through a memory in that way. At East River, he'd shown me memories of himself that he'd stitched together, but this was so different. I had no idea that was even a possibility for us. The throbbing ache behind my eyes had disappeared, and for the first time, the dive into his head didn't leave me exhausted or disoriented. I was still riding on that initial high of overcoming his barrier, just for a second.
"See you tomorrow, Ruby,"
Clancy said, tossing the plastic wrapper back up into the air. And as I walked out, clearly dismissed from his presence, I had the strangest feeling of lightness spreading through my chest, sparking and trembling and glowing. I'd held back the monster for too long, apparently. It needed to be let out, to stretch its legs, to remember how good the control felt. I remembered now how good being in control felt. I think I might have even enjoyed it. There was one laptop left in HQ, and despite the number of greens salivating to get a turn on it, their unspoken code of honor seemed to dictate that the kid Kate entrusted to it got ownership of it, or at least first dibs. So, at any hour of the day, you could find Nico working at the desk in the center of the otherwise empty computer room. Sometimes there was a small cluster gathered around him, crowding in over his shoulders and pointing at the screen, typing something in for him if he so much as leaned back.
"Those kids make vultures look like fluffy yellow chicks," Cole said as we stood outside, watching them through the long glass window. "If he were to fall over dead, would they just push the body out of the seat and use it as a footrest, do you think?"
I snorted. "They're bored. If we don't give them something to work on, they're going to start taking the electronic locks off the door to try turning them into cell phones."
"Yeah, well, Connor is the one that's supposed to be wrangling them. You and I sure as hell don't have the patience for..."
A green girl let out a squeal as Nico surrendered the laptop to her.
"This."
I had somehow managed to get through the day without letting my thoughts turn back to Kate and that expression on her face when she'd realized what Cole and I had done. "Has she checked in yet?" I asked. Cole rocked back on his heels, a crease forming between his brows.
"Nope."
She should have listened to us. I hadn't realized the words were out of my mouth until Cole dropped a comforting hand on my head.
"Mark my words, Jim. Connor will come crawling back tomorrow, tail tucked between her legs when they reject her. This'll be good for her. Everyone needs reality to punch them in the face every once in a while. Keeps you on guard."
But that was just it. I didn't want her knocked down like that. My anger had shallow roots. It had hurt me when she left.
I didn't have enough pride to act like it hadn't. But I could understand her decision, that instinctive need she always had to mend fractures and soothe jagged edges. Kate couldn't understand that the others would gladly abandon us, use us, hurt us, because she'd never once considered it herself. To have that be our first and only conversation since we'd arrived at the ranch, that was quietly killing me. I'd let her down so horrifically in Los Angeles, betrayed every last trace of trust she'd put in my ability to protect our team. I should have forced myself to say something to her before she left, any small conversation to start working my way back to her. Maybe it was too late now, and I'd missed my chance of trying to make things right between us. That single poisonous thought made me feel like I'd been turned inside out, dragged against the ground. I just didn't know what to say, how an apology could ever be enough for her to forgive me. How do you pour the weight you feel crushing your chest into two little words? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry wasn't enough, not for losing him. It echoed hollowly in the space he'd left behind. I'm sorry didn't balance out all of the things he could have and would have been. Cole gave a friendly wave to one of the green girls, Erica, who glanced over. She went bright pink and ducked back down, blocked from sight by Nico. The ghostly blue light from the computer screen gave him the look of a half-frozen corpse. The lines of his face seemed deeper, harsher, the longer he concentrated. I don't think this is a good idea to have him access Clancy's server, I said quietly. His judgment is impaired where Clancy's concerned.
Your reservations have been noted, Jim, but he's our man on this. I'm willing to bet on him. Nico has the most to prove. He won't let you or Kate down again, not if he can help it.
The if he can help it part is the problem.
Hey now, you got to plead Lee's case. I get to do the same for Nico, and it's your turn to deal.
Liam didn't give confidential information about the organization to the enemy's son, the same person who then not only betrayed us and him, but also possibly destroyed our one shot at a cure. I turned my back on the scene in front of me, leaning against the glass.
Right, but if he hadn't involved Clancy, if you hadn't been tricked into coming back, we wouldn't even know a cure existed.
I stared at him, momentarily speechless.
Didn't think about it that way, did ya?
Cole shrugged.
The loss. It opens a hole in you, a goddamn black hole at the center of your world. It sucks in your thoughts before you even have time to stop and examine them, and it's always hungry for more. It doesn't hurt any less to weigh what you lost against what you gained, does it?
I shook my head. After a moment, I kicked myself off the wall, holding out the piece of paper I'd used to write down the server and password information I'd seen in Clancy's mind. Cole took it wordlessly, glancing down at my scrawl.
Hey, Ruby,
he said quietly.
The thing is, what they don't tell you about forgiveness is this. You don't give it for the other person's sake, but your own.
Who'd you steal that one from? I asked.
That one's courtesy of having lived and learned.
I rolled my eyes. Oh, I'm sure. My mind couldn't finish the thought. It was there, then gone, just like the shadows that passed in his eyes. The recovery was just as quick. Cole's eyes jumped from me to the floor, and then the smile he forced onto his face was actually painful to witness. After a moment, he shrugged, his arms coming up and crossing over his chest. He was daring me to say something about it, and the longer I didn't, the harder it was for him to stand there, stand still. I saw the moment that vulnerability welled to the surface inside of him. The uncertainty of the moment made him look young, like a boy standing there waiting for some kind of punishment to be delivered.
"Who did you have to forgive?"
I asked. It wasn't my business, I knew that, but his reaction had left my chest hollow. I wanted to know. I wanted him to tell me, to ease some of the weight of whatever it was off him,
just for a second.
It's not... Listen, it doesn't matter. Just think about it.
He fumbled for the words, raking his hand back through his cropped hair. There were so many possible answers to my question. His parents for not seeing what he was, Liam for giving him a hard time, the remnants of the League for turning their backs on him. I knew about all of that, and the fact he wouldn't say, wouldn't so much as look at me, told me it had to be something and someone else. It had to be much worse than what I'd imagined. Cole had become so good at slipping into the armor of charm he always wore that I'd let myself be distracted enough to miss the signs of real turmoil beneath. He didn't trust anyone with the truth of exactly how deep the pain cut, did he? Maybe in time he could confide in me, and I could be for him what Liam and the others had been to me. They hadn't let the grip of Thurmond, of what I was, drag me back into a small, lonely existence. All right, I said, taking the paper back from him and pushing him into the room. Come on. Nico had to look up and then look again for his mind to accept that I was the one standing in front of him. Can you download the files from this server? I asked. He stared at me long enough that I felt an itch to fidget.
Yeah, sure, no problem,
Nico mumbled, taking the paper. The Greens had backed away from his chair to make room for us, but edged closer in curiosity as Nico brought up a series of screens. The strange code that formed the computer's language began to scroll by.
Hey, guys, Cole said in his best buddy-buddy voice. Can one of you go grab the senator from her quarters and send her our way? The rest of you would absolutely be my heroes if you went and helped poor Lucy scrape together dinner.
They were too smart not to figure out they were being dismissed, but none of them seemed to care. On the screen, a window popped up, and a half dozen folders appeared. What was that for? I asked when the last Green had slipped out and shut the door behind him. Cole silently pointed down at Nico, who'd gone so still in his chair it wasn't clear if he was breathing. His shoulders sank, rolled down and forward, like he wanted nothing more than to curl his ends together like an old piece of paper and disappear.
Nico, my man, Cole said with that same casual voice. Do you think you could go?
I'm not going to go.
I had to strain my ears to hear him.
Maybe you could.
I'm not going to go,
Nico said firmly and clicked on the first of the file folders. It was only when the bigger folder opened that I saw the label. Thurmond. There were maybe 50 files total inside of it, a mixture of videos, photos, and scanned documents. Nico navigated across the screen, releasing his breath harshly. The cursor hovered over one of the images. Somehow, even before he opened it, a part of me knew what face would appear on the screen. He had always seemed younger than he actually was, but the image of Nico as a boy, an actual young child, drove into me with all the gentleness of a spike. His dark hair had been shaved down to black fuzz, and his normally rich, tan skin was the color of cement powder. It contrasted sharply with his dark, expressionless eyes and the scars still healing along his scalp.
Oh, God,
I thought, a sick feeling slamming into me.
Oh, God.
Nico, at 17, stared at the child like he was a stranger. This was the hell he'd had to climb out of, and he wasn't running from it. He wasn't even turning his back on it. A slow, grudging respect pooled inside of me as I watched him hold it together when I felt like I was one wrong image away from shattering. Thurmond. This was Nico at Thurmond. The camp's early years had been dedicated to researching the cause of IAAN, but had expanded as the years went on. Before I ever set foot there, Leda Corp had taken over that branch of research and moved those original test subjects, kids, to their facility in Philadelphia. Cole had been in deep cover at Leda, trying to turn up valuable intel on the research they'd done on the kids. And it had been Cole who had managed to ultimately extract Nico by secretly supplying the method of doing so to Alvin.
after Clancy had gotten himself out of Thurmond and left all of the other kids behind.
You okay?
Cole dragged one of the nearby chairs over so he was right beside him. After a moment, I did the same from the other side.
You don't have to see this,
Cole added.
Ruby and I can go through the files.
These are his, aren't they? Cole and I exchanged a look. He nodded.
If he has the files on the Thurmond testing program,
Nico said,
he might have some information on here about the cause of IAAN, or at least what they ruled out. This is...
Nico took a shuddering breath in and released it before closing the photo and moving out of that folder entirely, back to the full list.
It's good. If we get something out of it, it's good.
Senator Cruz stuck her head in, and Cole waved her over, giving up his seat as he quickly explained what we were looking at.
My God,
she breathed out, leaning closer as Nico opened the folder labeled Federal Coalition. Her discomfort grew exponentially when he pulled open the document with her name. There were hundreds, literally hundreds, of profiles spread out among the folders. PSFs, men and women in President Gray's inner circle, Children's League agents, Albin, and kids, including myself, Liam, and Chubbs. In the latter case, he'd clearly pulled the original files from the PSF and Skip Tracer networks and expanded on them with his own new section, Observations. His observations of me? Indecisive when making a decision that affects only her. More confident in dealing with others close to her to the point of being overly protective. No real vices, doesn't enjoy sweet foods, enjoys older music, related to memories of father, allows herself one unrealistic hope of finding her grandmother. Desperation for closeness and intimacy means response to overtures of friendship. Tease out thread of physical attraction. Gullible, not vindictive, forgives too easily. My jaw set in irritation and embarrassment at the less than flattering assessment. Forgives too easily? We'd see about that.
Here, that's the one. Tribes, I said. Open that one.
Tribes? Senator Cruz asked. That's what Clancy called the groups of kids who left East River. The safe haven. Well, not really a safe haven in the end, but that was his claim. Whenever a group of kids left, he'd send them off with supplies. And the road code to communicate safe routes to each other. I'd wondered, more than once, how many of these tribes had left East River together before we arrived there. And now, I had my answer. 12. Most in groups of 5 or 6. The grid was divided into columns by group, with dates and locations listed under each header. I had Nico scroll across until he found the listing for Zoo's group. There were 2 updates beneath it, one in Colorado, one in California. The last update was a month ago.
He knew where she was.
Or at least that she had made it out west. I gripped my hands together behind my back to keep from giving into the urge to punch the screen. He'd known. That whole time I'd felt hopeless about ever finding her again.
How did he get these updates? Cole asked. This is gold, but only if the information is good.
He told me once, Nico started to say.
I felt, rather than saw, his eyes dart to me for a moment. His voice was soft again when he continued.
There was a number that they could call and leave status messages, or ask for help. He said he sometimes helped one group find another if they were feeling scared to be out on their own in smaller numbers. He knew everything.
I didn't doubt that. There was so much information here, we'd have to spend the next few days weeding through it. Our cursory glance through had turned up absolutely nothing about Lillian, not that I had expected it to. Can you go back to the Thurmond folder? I asked. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Senator Cruz press a hand against her mouth and start to rise.
All of the camps. Are they all like that?
She asked.
It's sort of like comparing rotten apples,
Cole said, and I knew he was assessing her reaction the same way I was.
They're all bad, but some of them make the others look appetizing.
What's the most recent file in the folder? I asked Nico. Can you tell?
Yeah, it's this one.
The fire evacuation plan? Senator Cruz clarified. We'd already looked through the document, seen the maps marked with the order in which the PSFs and camp controllers would clear out the cabins in the event of an emergency. The other files were on PSF personnel and materials on the research conducted in what I knew was called the infirmary. None of which featured Clancy himself, of course. If evidence had existed, he would have found a way to destroy it rather than let anyone see him so powerless. Clancy kept dropping hints that there was something going on.
And you're sure he wasn't just baiting you to get a rise out of you?
Senator Cruz patted my shoulder.
His father loves playing that game with people.
Nico was just about to close the file's window when Cole sucked in a sharp breath and said,
Wait, scroll back up.
Cole's eyes narrowed and his hand came up to rub along his unshaved jaw. I looked between him and the screen several times, trying to see whatever it was he was seeing.
Damn,
Cole said softly. I felt something heavy drag down my stomach.
What?
They're moving kids out of the camp in this scenario. But if there were a fire, then why not move the kids to the inner rings until it's contained? Or why not herd the kids to the boundaries of the camp? The thing is like a mile wide, right? And why only account for one scenario? What happens if the fire is in the mess, or the work facility? We just assumed it was an emergency plan based on a bunch of arrows and numbers, but there's nothing on here to indicate that that's what it is.
If it's not an emergency action plan, then what is it? I asked.
I think it was an evacuation plan, in the event of the camp's location being compromised, or if Gray was taken out or overthrown. But look.
I leaned forward. He was pointing to the small text at the top of the page. The word amended was listed next to December 10th of the previous year. The date struck through beside it was from almost 5 years earlier. Cole took control of the mouse and scrolled down again.
They've labeled this with the operational name Cardinal. And here, I thought the numbers next to each cabin referred to how quickly, by the minute, the PSFs needed to reach them. But 301 could be March 1st, couldn't it?
Wait, I said. Wait, what does it mean, then?
It means that they're not evacuating the camp,
Nico said, his voice small.
They're moving the kids out. 4 cabins each day.
Am I wrong in assuming that the only reason they'd move the kids out is if they were closing the camp?
Senator Cruz asked.
There was another file labeled Cardinal, Cole said. Yeah, that one. The list of the small camps.
And the PSF personnel transfer list, I said.
Oh my God.
I pressed my hands against my face and forced myself to remember to breathe. The room was shrinking around me, tightening and tightening around my shoulders as the possibility solidified into something real. They're closing the camp.
Sweetheart, are you all right?
Senator Cruz asked.
I don't understand. Isn't it a good thing? From what you've told me about the conditions in the camp.
If you look at it that way, it is a blessing, Cole said. But raising the camp likely also means moving or shredding all of the hard copy records on site. Not to mention, the camp can't serve as evidence of the cruelty of the rehab program. The camp is a powerful symbol. It's the oldest, the largest, and, I'm going to venture a guess here, really sets the bar for abuse and mistreatment.
Separating the kids. The cabins. My throat was dry. Most of them had been together for almost 10 years. They were each other's families. And they wanted to take even that from them?
All right, so that's one camp out of contention.
Senator Cruz leaned back against her seat and folded her hands in her lap.
What are the other potential big hits?
There is no other big hit, Cole said. We're still going after Thurmond. It's our end game.
I looked up. Shock must have registered on my face because confusion spread across Cole's.
Really, Jim? I must have said it 10 times this morning. Thurmond, no matter what. What's with that look?
I moved back through my day, trying to remember. It must have been after we finished training, or before Liam and the others had returned. The whole morning had a strange, glossy sheen to it, as if exhaustion was clouding my memories like steam on a mirror. As if tracking my thoughts, Cole said,
"Damn, kid, we need to get you more sleep."
Is 5 weeks enough time to pull something like this off? Concern creased Senator Cruz's face.
"We'll make it work,"
Cole said simply. "You asked them to write up proposals for a mission, correct?" Senator Cruz asked. "I don't mean to be insulting, but how in the world are these children supposed to come up with plans for a successful military operation and then execute it?" "We received training," I told her, "to do exactly that. At least those of us who were with the League. We need to have time to work with the other kids. Bring more in, make sure they can function under pressure." Cole reached for the small stack of papers he'd collected from the groups and passed them to her.
"I'm impressed with some of their imaginations. There's a lot of good stuff here. The Greens really put the best of the League to shame with some of this. I definitely wasn't expecting to get statistical probabilities of success, or..."
He squinted at the page he held.
"Christ, I don't even know what that word means. In any case, before we hit Thurmond, we'll have to do a test run on a smaller camp first. Make sure the plan is viable."
The senator sat up a little straighter. "Any camp?"
"Preferably one on this coast, but yeah, sure. We'll try to match a smaller camp with the layout of Thurmond, get an experience as close as possible to the real deal."
"Nevada." Cole leaned against the desk, his eyes lighting up with excitement.
"Are you thinking of Oasis?"
Oasis. The League had kept a map of the United States posted on one of the hallways, all of the known camps, big and small, marked with thumbtacks. I closed my eyes, trying to picture the pastel spread of states moving east to west. It was in the northeast corner of the state. Remote. Nico didn't break his gaze from the laptop screen.
"That's the one with the children from the Federal Coalition."
Senator Cruz nodded, swallowing hard, and brought up a hand to rub against her throat. She looked at some point past us, at the clock on the wall, maybe.
"My daughter Rosa is one of them. I put her in hiding with her grandmother, but Gray was determined. He hired men specifically to find our children, to make an example of all of us. I know of at least 10 other Federal Coalition officials who believe their children were taken there. Knew of. God, is there a chance any of those people are still alive in the detainment camps? Will they ever get to see their children again?"
"Sure,"
Cole said, not sounding entirely convinced himself.
"There's always a chance, right? But regardless of whether or not their parents are still alive and kicking, they'll have a place with us. A chance to fight if they want it. Lord knows they don't have anything else to go back to in Los Angeles."
Nico shoved his chair back and stood, his hands coming up to clutch at his elbows. His eyes were darting around, creating a scattered path across the room, trying to land on everything but us.
I'm going to go shower.
He couldn't have left the room faster if it had been on fire.